Morning, sunshine. Want to start your day with a nice bowl of
Kevin and Bean
breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Well, heck yeah, why not?
All right, it is time for our breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That kids, the Red Hot Chili Peppers playing live here on the Breakfast with RHCP on the Kevin and Bean Show. Nice. Welcome, you guys. How are you? It's album release day.
Wow, is it?
It's like giving birth today. This is the big day you've been looking forward to.
We've been looking forward to this for so long that I think I'll actually miss the release itself. I'm probably going to sleep through it because I feel like it should have come out 2 months ago. So every day I've been waiting, and now I've probably missed the whole thing.
And then somebody will call you on Tuesday and go, "Hey, it went pretty well." Flea, what's it like for you on the day it gets put out?
It's truly a thrilling moment when it comes out. The thrill of that and the magic feeling of that has been like that for me from our very first demo tape, even though it never came out. But just the feeling of the music being such an interior thing from so long, from the first time of sitting down at a piano or over a guitar or whatever and writing, to slowly developing an idea with your close friends. And it's still being this, like, our secret project, you know, this thing we're making. And all of a sudden it's out and people hear it, and it's just the craziest metamorphosis. It's really like an alchemic, wild feeling. I love it so much.
And I have to also imagine that no matter how long you do it, and you guys have been doing this a long time, you never get over the thrill of, hey, we get to make music for a living. This is like, it's such a blessing, right? This is your job.
It is. It's like a mother hen never gets over the thrill of sitting on her egg.
I've never asked one, but I'll take your word on that.
I'm a mother hen, so I know.
All right, we have to ask. We have many questions for you. It's been a while since we've had a chance to see you guys. 5 years since the last record, by the way, until I'm with you out today. Here's the important question that we just have to get out of the way because it's like the giant elephant in the room and everybody wants to know. What are you going to do if there's no basketball? I mean, what is your backup plan if the NBA strike, you know, the lockout happens and there's no season? What do you...
If that's the biggest giant elephant in the room, I think we're doing okay.
All right. Yeah, I was expecting something much more scary.
Yeah, like there's a war breaking out in Uzbekistan or something, but if it's just basketball, yeah. I think we'll live.
It's just higher.
I never thought I would hear you say just basketball.
Or like, you know, you're a weird-looking little guy. What are you going to do about that?
Hey. You know, we've already been planning on attending some high school basketball games.
Excellent.
Perhaps tuning into the college arts of basketball and figuring out what's going on with that.
Good.
And, yeah, just diverting your attention. If they don't want to cooperate and show up for the fans, then we'll find other places to occupy
ourselves. Someplace.
Couldn't the NBA stars just sort of get together and do pickup games in colleges and parks? And
I like the pickup games.
I think they are.
That's going to happen. No, there's some talk about that.
Let there be pickup games.
Red Hot Chili Peppers here. It's Breakfast With here on the Kevin Bean Show. Many questions, many more performances to come. And you guys have a few of your own, right? Some questions you're going to be asking the guys, right?
Yes,
help us out.
Raising their hands. That doesn't help.
Doesn't help on the radio. Well, you're going to have your chance, too, when we return with the guys right after this on the Kevin Bean Show.
Nice tiara.
You don't ask your parents for permission to rock.
It's Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh my God!
Yeah! Yeah!
Come on!
All right, easy.
Yeah!
It's Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Wow!
Not bad. Come on now.
All right, why don't we start with the beginning on this new record, I'm With You, out today, available finally for sale. Adventures of Rain Dance Maggie might be a great place to start because that's the first thing that people heard from the new record.
Shocking.
Right? Shocking how?
Just shocking. I'm just throwing it out there. I like to see these words coming out of your mouth.
Rain Dance Maggie, as is usually the case with your songs, I've heard it a bunch. No clue what I'm listening to. Not a clue.
As is usually
the case. You're too deep for me. I know it means something, and it's cosmic and meaningful. What's going on?
Wait, could you say that about the song, You Always Sing the Same? Can we sing him a little, You Always Sing the Same, just so he doesn't think that all of our songs are meaningless?
Okay, you go.
Go ahead.
You don't want to count it off?
I do the background vocals. One, two, three.
You always sing, you always sing, you always sing the same, you always sing, you always sing, you always sing the same, you always sing, you always sing, you always sing the same, you always sing, you always sing, you always sing the same, you always sing, you always sing, you always sing, you always sing the same.
That was nice.
I like the intensity of Flea on that one, man. He was really concerned that he'd be right on pitch, right on time.
But you know what I'm saying. We're dying to know what that song means to you. Like, what's going on in it? Because it has some great imagery in it. But you know, you're the guys who wrote it.
Yeah, it really starts off with a bass line. That's where that song sort of begins and ends, is with a deeply soulful, funky bass line that you just want to get inside of. You know, and that's what Flea brought to the table when we started writing that song. And we all just kind of hugged and cuddled in that bass line to the best of our ability. And until we found, you know, other colors and textures and beats to mingle with it. And it's kind of self-explanatory. It's a patchwork of imagery and feelings and, you know, wordplay and emotions and sing along and see how you feel.
How do most songs begin? Is it with one person that comes in with an idea? Maybe Josh comes in with an idea, and how does Josh change the chemistry of the songwriting?
All different ways. I'll come in with something. He'll come in with something. Anthony will just hum notes together, and one of us will put chords under, and Chad will just start playing something. All different ways, I think.
And it's funny, like, after the record comes out, people start hearing stuff, we get asked to explain it, you know? And for us, I think it comes from a place that is an inexplicable place, because it truly does come from a magical source, you know, and we don't try to control it, we just let it happen. And I think for Anthony, lyrically, even, you know, there are narratives, but still, I think we're all just trying to make art. And I think it's our responsibility as making art to just kind of get out of the way and let it flow through us. And we can't always explain it perfectly.
Are you saying I should be embarrassed by my question? I should be ashamed?
No, I'm just
no shame. Now who's the moron over here?
He's the bass, and you're the effing moron. These guys, what's up?
Wait, last time I checked, the human finger was not a curse word.
No. Kevin, you were surprised and enraptured by the cowbell on the record. It was the happiest surprise of the year on the radio for you this year.
How did the cowbell come about on that song? I love it. And yet it's not a real Red Hot Chili Peppers staple.
A cow walked into the studio and wandered down Sunset Boulevard. Apparently was lost.
Okay.
Chad began to ride the cow.
Okay.
And one thing led to another, and it ended up on the record.
Did he try other sounds? Did he just go, hey, I think this will sound good now? What was the...
The truth is...
I love it, but...
Yeah, this record is different because percussion is a heavier voice. A more dominant voice on this record. And, Flea went on tour with Atoms for Peace and met this guy, Mauro, who's kind of a phenomenal percussionist. And Flea suggested to us very wisely, why don't we try recording with a percussionist live when we make our record? Maybe it'll change the way we play. Something cool will happen. And he was right. You know, something cool did happen. And our grooves now have a variety of really wicked percussion. So much so that we're bringing this guy on tour with us, and
that's all his stuff over there.
Wow,
I didn't recognize half of that.
How about
if you could only see that stuff, it is.
Josh is going to go give us an example.
Look at that! Nice. Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful sound. This might be an excellent time to hear that song that we've been talking about, "The Adventures of Rain Dance Maggie." The new Chili Peppers album is out, available for you to buy, and you should. It's called "I'm With You." You guys want to hear that one live?
Adventures of Rain Dance Maggie, see? Yeah, wise guy.
Lipstick, junkie, debunked, the only one. She came back wearing a smile. Looking like someone drove me that funny to unplug. It's just a turn around and we go. Oh, well, and we go. Oh, 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 oh. Tick tock, I want to rock you like the 80s. Cop blocking isn't allowed. Tugboat, she lock is in the memorabilia. Who said three is a crowd? Yeah.
double it, double it.
It's the Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers here on the Kevin Bean Show.
And we'll be right back.
Possibly the best rock show ever.
It's Kevin and Bean's Breakfast
with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Hey, it's the Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers here on the Kevin and Bean Show. How you guys doing? Having fun? Guys are nice enough to be here and performing live. We have more to come. Producer Alex, who looks fantastic today, by
good
the way.
Good morning.
Is
good
in
morning,
the audience.
Peppers.
You've got Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. We'd like to include a couple of questions from the audience this segment.
The number one fans, everybody here. I have your number one fan, Crystal. She has a question for you.
Okay.
Hi, I wanted to know, Anthony, some of your lyrics are so crazy and interesting. What do you go through when you're writing them?
Wow. Well, thank you, Crystal. I like crazy and interesting, confusing and blasphemous. I don't know. It's always different. You know, sometimes before we even start writing, I have a little notebook and I just start collecting words and word combinations and ideas. And my favorite lyrics are ones that just sort of fly into my head while Josh and Flea and Chad are jamming. Like if they find some space with some noise and it makes me think very specifically of an idea, those are my favorite because those are freebies. And then other times you just go home and sit down at your desk and start writing until it feels right.
Thank you.
That's such a fascinating thing, and that's why you get asked so much what the songs mean and how you do it, because you guys have to start with nothing, and then you come out with art.
And that is magic. That really is magic to those of us who can't do it and are on the other side of the radio.
It's magic to us, too. And especially like when you all of a sudden you're holding a CD and it's this tangible thing. Like I said, it's like goes from this just a feeling to this tangible thing. But mostly, more than anything, you just have to do it. You know, it's like I think for anyone making any kind of art, writing lyrics or writing, you know, any kind of music or writing anything, you have to sit down and put pen to paper, put finger to bass, put whatever you put to whatever you put. And do it. And sometimes it's a mundane, arduous thing, and you just try and try, and you might squeak out a couple little things, but you have to do it all the time.
Are there times where it feels like a job and hard work to write a song?
Hard work, yes, but it's welcomed work. It's good work if you can get it. I mean, it's really, we've always had a pretty good work ethic, and back in the day, we used to have this thing where we would say it's time to put on our blue-collar shirts and punch the clock, but that's part of the magic also is like Flea said, just showing up, suiting up and showing up and being present.
Are there days that you walk away with your heads hung and just go, well, maybe tomorrow?
Of course. You know what I mean? Of course. Of course.
Plus there's those times when you'll have a day and you're trying really hard and you feel like you're just not getting there, you know, and it's like, oh man, like this, what's going on, you know, and the sky's falling. And then you go back a week later and listen to the tapes from that day and it's like, oh my God, that was great. You know, and you don't even realize it sometimes.
So. You just need a little space, a little distance from it. And
yeah.
And you can appreciate what happened.
Yep.
Yeah, all moods and emotions welcome. You know, it wouldn't be right if it was just smooth sailing all the time.
The album is out now. We're talking with the Chili Peppers about I'm With You. You guys have done some different promotional things for the launch, streaming it on iTunes last week, for instance. You've got the thing in theaters tonight. And I think tomorrow night, too, the Fathom Events thing, which is new for you. Tell me about that.
Well, you know what's amazing is that we're playing tonight in Germany. Have you ever read Jonathan Livingston Seagull?
Not since I was a very little person.
Well, he can be in different places at the same time. It's phenomenal. He thinks himself into places.
So am I understanding that it's not live, the thing that's in theaters tonight?
It's live. It is live.
Yeah. Oh, it's live.
Yeah, it's going to be live. We're going to bring the live.
Now, is this something somebody came to you and pitched you and said, hey, here's how it works. Movie theaters all over the place show you guys doing a live concert. It's a way to do a concert for everybody in every city.
It was, in fact, a pitch from someone who we listened to, a wise and wonderful wizard.
That mustache on a big screen is going to be phenomenal.
That's a great mustache.
I mean,
this
seriously.
One or this one?
Both. They're both. The one on your T-shirt is awesome. The one on your face is, I can't take my eyes off of it.
You know, into everybody's life, a little mustache must fall.
I hope that ends up in a Chili Pepper song.
I never thought about it that way.
The guys are going to play again in a couple of minutes. Alex, how about one more question from the crowd right now?
I have Bob here from Agoura Hills.
I was just wondering, guys, while you guys are on the road, how long does it take before you start fighting with each other?
Usually starts in the airport before we ever leave L.A. Josh will come in with a sandwich and shove it in my face and say, I told you not to wear that outfit today.
Always force-feeding people.
He's the instigator?
No, but or on the phone the day before we leave.
You do have to spend a lot of time together, and your tours tend to be a year or two. That's a lot of traveling and
a lot of decisions that have to be made.
You know, being in a band is anyone who's had a successful or unsuccessful long-term relationship with the opposite sex, or if you were gay, the same sex. Knows what it is to be in a relationship, and being in a creative process with someone when you're making yourself vulnerable and putting your ideas out there, and not always agreeing, you know, it's a challenge, but one that we welcome and that we're grateful for.
This time around,
like, just like talking about it being work, that's part of the work, you know, and one of the great things for us, having been together as long as we have, is seeing that when things are difficult. We've seen them be difficult before, and we know that you get through it. You know,
you'll get to the other side
Yeah, and when the process itself and everything about it is really all about love, love always wins.
This time around, you're going to the UK, Costa Rica, Peru, Chile, Argentina, and that's all next month, by the way. Picture that passport situation, that travel schedule. Now that you have young ones at home, are you changing the route a little bit or spending less time away from home before you come back for a little while? Arranging the tour differently?
It is different. We put them to work.
Good.
The little ones.
Roadies?
No, it's kind of cool that three of us all have children in and around the same age. So when they all come together, they have a little posse, a little built-in posse. And we tried it. We took them to Japan and Hong Kong.
Wow.
And it was mostly successful.
Occasional meltdown.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
They need to start their own band, Mini RHCP. Would that be so cool?
My son already thinks that it's just a given that he's going to join our band in the near future.
But he wants to change the name, though, doesn't he?
No, he has a band called The Lemons.
The Lemons.
Okay. But he also just says to me point blank, no, I'm joining your band.
You think he's replacing you or do you think with you?
I'm afraid to ask.
Well, I have my sonny has started a band called Marigold Phantom Menace.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And my older daughter has a band called Grand Rapids. They're really good.
Which this is awesome. Very good, by the way. Check out some Grand Rapids. I was really impressed.
It's great, right?
Wow, fantastic. Yeah. Speaking of bands that play live, how about another Red Hot Chili Peppers song for you here today? What do you guys think?
I'm gonna so polite indeed. Well, I got everything I need, and just make my days a breeze, and take away my self-destruction. It's bitter, baby, and it's very sweet. A holy roller coaster, but I'm on my feet. Take me to the river, let me on your show. Well, I've been coming back, baby, I've been coming back for more. Drinking things down the deep, the deep down the lid. I cannot forget, but I'm on out of devil. People bless us, I'm a sinner, but I won't regret it never. Where I go, I just don't know. Like, gotta take it slow. And when I find my peace of mind, I'm gonna give you some of my good time. Where I go, I just don't know.
It's the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and we will be right back on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Let's get ready for breakfast!
The Kevin and Bean Show. Have your breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
All right, we are back. It's our breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. We've got some more people in the audience that are going to ask some questions of the guys.
I have Daniel here representing the Valley, North Hills.
Hi there, guys. I work for a senior community. We would love for you guys to play at our community for the seniors. But my question is, have you guys ever considered making a band, making your band based on a movie, and who would you cast?
You mean making a movie based
Correct.
On the band?
Correct. Daniel's really nervous.
I think we all
don't understand the question.
We got the question.
Okay.
We have to reinterpret that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Easy to start with Chad. Think Will Ferrell. Oh, yeah. Will Ferrell would play him.
Good.
In a heartbeat.
Josh, how about you? Brad Pitt?
Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah, Chad. Yeah, Josh.
Chad. Flea, you've got quite the movie background. Have you ever given this any thought?
Yeah, I've given it a lot of thought. After careful meditative contemplation, I would like to be played by Dakota Fanning.
Oh, my God!
What?
Oh, Jesus! I can't believe you said that.
You were thinking that joke?
Just sitting here waiting for my turn to say Dakota Fanning, and you said
Took
Dakota
his
Fanning.
Guy.
That is, she can play both of us.
She's that talented.
She is that good.
She is that good.
So crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are the odds?
You guys should be in a band together.
That's just weird.
We're linked.
Speaking of Josh, you grew up in the Valley, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
This might be an outstanding opportunity in the Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers to meet Josh, a face that a lot of them haven't seen before or have seen on the side of the stage instead of on the front of the stage. Tell us a little bit about you and your musical background and where you came from and how you got to this point.
I came from, I was born in Santa Monica, but I grew up in Northridge in the Valley. And,
okay. One person, good.
I grew up listening to you guys on the radio. And yeah.
Thank you for that. How early did you start playing guitar?
I was 15. I was kind of late. I played drums first.
Okay.
I don't really have anything.
And was it a hobby for you, or was it something you thought, hey, like these guys did so young, hey, this is our life, we've got to do this for a living. This is what we got to be, we got to make it music.
I never sort of thought of it as a living, you know. I still don't think of it as something I do for a work, you know. So I just like playing, and I do it as much as I can, and that's all.
And was it a surprise to you to end up being the guitarist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, or did it happen so organically that it just made sense?
It happened organically, but it was a surprise to be asked. I wasn't, you know, I hadn't spoken to them in a little while. Their band had taken a break, and I wasn't sure if anybody was how interested they were in carrying on after John left the band. So yeah, I was surprised to hear that they were interested in carrying on and that they wanted to do it with me.
Were there any surprises about making an album in the band? Like, was it the way you expected it would be to record a record together?
Yeah, it was exactly as I thought it would be, just based on my knowledge of how they work and how open they are, and you know, everyone being an equal
welcome
part of it.
All right, let's do another question. It's the Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Alex, who's up next?
I have our buddy Chris right here.
Who are some of the new up-and-coming bands that you feel have longevity in their mainstream careers, and why?
Up and coming
bands that are not only good, but bands that are going to make it and stick around is what you're asking.
Yeah, that are going to last.
Oh, like, you mean like young groups who we feel have the
Yeah, new
the
bands
power?
Over the past, you know, 5 years or so, yeah.
The first name that jumps to my mind is Zach Irons. I feel like Zach Irons is here to stay. He's not yet popular, but he is yet talented and hardworking and soulful, and clearly he's not going anywhere.
Is he any relation to Jack?
He's Jack, the son of Jack.
Son of Jack, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who is just a pedigree. Bad, can you say ass?
Sure.
He's just a badass guitar player who's dedicated to the musical arts and has a furious energy about him that I think he's going to...
Anthony, you've done more publicity for Off in recent appearances and videos. That's another band that I assume you're into.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Is this a mystery?
No. Keith Moore. It's hard not to root for that guy. He's a pure rock man.
How about you, Flea? I know that you appreciate so many different kinds of music. I follow you on Twitter, and I see the awe you have for, like, Bobby Womack shows up at your concert, and that blows your mind. But I bet there are young players that you come across that are inspiring in a different way.
Yeah, all the time. It's weird. I'm kind of drawing a blank right now about who to say. But I'm, you know, like all of us, always listening to everything that I can. I mean, I just listen to music from as soon as I get up in the morning until I fall asleep every day. But nothing is popping into my head that I need to say right now. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of a dumb, slow-witted man.
I can think of another one.
Who?
Tanarawen. I feel like Tanarawen are going to be around as long as the gentleman who asked.
I hope you're taking notes out there.
Tanarawen's a great band from Mali. They're Touareg guys, and if you get a chance, get their records or listen to them. They're really amazing.
Do they throat sing or anything crazy?
No, regular singing, just really great songs in a unique groove that is just this bottomless pit of depth. Yeah.
Flea, speaking of the love of music, the lifelong love of music, this would be a great time to promote and have you talk about what's going on with the Silver Lake Conservancy. I know you did that show last week to raise a bunch of money for him, and we've had you on the Kevin Bean Show several times with fundraisers over the years and stuff. That's something that's really, like, deep into your heart, something you've really kind of made a lifelong commitment to. Tell folks about it who maybe haven't heard about it.
Well, the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music is a nonprofit music school that we started about 10 years ago. We teach about 700 students a week, about 300 of whom go for free. It's not about being famous or being a celebrity. It's, academic music education and technique on an instrument and playing in an ensemble and, studying music. And I started it with a couple of friends because of the public school system just doesn't have the funding to have the arts anymore. And just wanted to try to fill that void. And it's been so great to be a part of it. And Anthony's on the board of directors. And everyone in the band has really helped doing benefits. We've done a number of benefits for the school. And it's, I'm really close to it. And it's just been a great thing for the community. And it continues to flourish and do really well. And
do you teach anything there?
I have. Whenever I've had enough time off, I teach there. But kids need consistency, and they need teachers to be there the same every day. And my professional life gets so busy that I just don't have time,
In some of the downtime before this record, though, you went back to school and studied even further into music, right?
I did, yeah. I was lucky enough that they let me into the Thornton School of Music at USC, and I studied, and that was a blast. And I love education, and for me, really, like, the most important thing is education. And I know, granted, there are all different types of intelligences, and a lot of the best ones don't come from, institutions. But all the, the magical things that are there in literature and science and arts and all the great things are every kid deserves a chance to be taught, to the best of their abilities and to use their minds.
But it's funny because if I'm at USC when you walk in, I go, is this a joke? This is Flea's.
He doesn't need this, right?
He knows everything about music.
Yeah, well, I don't. I know very little. So I was really excited to get to learn.
Well, let's give you a chance to pick up the bass and show us what you learned in that summer school class and play another song. The Red Hot Chili Peppers are here. It's Breakfast with the Band. New album out today called I'm With You. Who wants to hear another song from it right now? right time. The Red Hot Chili Peppers are here. It's Breakfast with RHCP. And we'll be right back
on the Kevin and Bean Show.
This is a big one.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
It's beginning to look a lot like breakfast.
It's Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
We're back with more of the Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Having a tremendous amount of fun with these guys. The album is finally out and available. It is called I'm With You. By the way, when we talked about the movie theater thing, I forgot to mention it's fathomevents.com for people who want to buy tickets and want to find the theater near them to go see it tonight or tomorrow night. And the show that you did at the Roxy recently is airing on Fuse tomorrow night, so people can see that club show that you did. Yeah. So a lot of Chili Peppers this week available for people.
We're wildly excited about this movie theater thing.
That sounds cool.
We are putting all of our energy and love into this show, so I hope you check it out.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about this thing we're doing tonight, playing in movie theaters, is we're playing songs that we've never played live before. And when you do that, there's a certain type of energy that comes with it.
Is it scare?
It's scary.
I'm scared.
It's scary because anything can happen, yeah. You know. And when you're taking a risk and there's room for drastic error, it gives it an edge and a tension that you really just can't fake, you know. So I'm really excited to do it tonight. And just to be the concept of us playing it, broadcasting live in movie theaters all around the world.
I love that too. Second to seeing you guys live. It's an amazing idea to see on the big screen.
It sounds good in movie theaters. Yeah.
Right. In the interviews leading up to the release of I'm With You, you guys have – it's come up a couple of times where you've talked about the concerts that you've sneaked into over the years. I saw your MTV interview at the Forum where you talked about sneaking in to go see The Who, and I saw your interview for the Roxy where you talked about sneaking in the window in the back to go see shows and stuff. So you would encourage your fans to sneak into your shows if at all possible, I hope.
I wouldn't discourage it.
Okay, good. Was it harder? It was way easier back then to sneak into stuff? Because I was amazed at how many shows you guys saw for free.
You just have to use your imagination. You know, we were on tour, whatever it was, 5 years ago, and we were in Vancouver, Canada. And the most beautiful woman walked in the back door wearing a construction helmet. And I was like, do you work here? And she's like, no, I just put this on and walked in and no one stopped me. I was like, genius.
It's a lot easier for beautiful women.
Yes.
You put that same hat on. I'm not sure it works.
Not
with this shirt on anyways.
maybe the mustache.
You know, another thing we used to do was to go into movies or any places, you just walk in backwards. It's like a psychological trip on the people guarding the door. They don't stop you.
So they
kind of assume you're already in. You're going in backwards. It looks like...
That may be the most useful thing you've heard today.
I'm going to try that.
But that said, you know, we were little scallywags and thieves. And whenever you, you know, actually steal anything, it doesn't really work out good for you in the end. So
we paid the price.
You pay the price. You always end up paying.
Hey, you've given back in
the
lots of
the price of having
ways.
Fun.
Yeah. Had a great time. Got it for free. Whoop, whoop.
Before we go back out to Alex for our final questions here from the crowd, Chad, what's up with you, man? You in a good place and psyched about the album being out today and looking forward to what's happening?
I'm really in a great place. I'm very, very happy to be here tonight.
We didn't get to hear
you,
from
you, with my friends,
yeah,
these beautiful people.
How was making this album for you? Was it different from some of the others? And it had been a number of years. What was it like to kind of get back in the saddle?
It was different. There was a different gentleman playing the guitar. So that had a lot to do with it. But we went about it the same way. You know, we just got a room and came up with some songs, and then we all played together live, which when we record, which is a kind of a lost art.
I was going to ask you about that. So many people are doing it by mail now, it seems like.
They got their files, and we actually look at each other and get in a room and play, and that's the way that we record. And I think it's really important to capture the essence of a good performance live.
So. I saw an interview with Anthony where you said you made it kind of a promise to yourselves you're going to write for a year. Is that true?
Yeah, well...
A full year.
We wanted to write, and we also just wanted to be a band. You know, we wanted to get our thing together with Josh and feel like a real band before we stepped into the recording studio. So we didn't want to feel the burden of obligation. We wanted to just feel the burden of love. And
so at the beginning, maybe you just started jamming or playing or whatever.
I mean, we blessed pray every day we record. And we amassed a way fruitful bounty of songs long before we expected to. But we didn't sell ourselves short. We stayed to the year.
Is it true that you wanted 12 but ended up with 14 songs because you couldn't agree?
That's close to true.
Close to true.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it went down, but it's always hard to narrow down the songs.
I imagine.
And yeah. We never agree.
But the weird thing is we did agree. We agreed. We looked at the 12, and Flea was petitioning for a song called Dance, 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 and we all looked at each other and went, yes, we love that song. It must end the record. And
okay.
So in the end, it really was unusually about agreement. Usually we disagree more about songs.
I did petition for Magpies, too. It didn't turn out so good for me.
Well, you don't get everything you want.
Yeah, no, but again, it was we all loved Magpies and wish that we could have snuck it in there.
Now, Josh, you came up with the album title. Is that true?
I wrote it down and slipped it on the table. I saw it written.
You don't want
somewhere.
To be too bold. You just kind of,
yeah.
How about this?
Hey, who left that piece of paper there with the great album title?
It was the day
before
I was doing something, and
I was
you guys
just
could...
coughing and pointing.
I'm with you.
I'm with you.
Yeah, Shane.
All right, we have time for, I think, our final two questions here on The Breakfast with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Alex is in the crowd with...
I have the beautiful Cynthia, who, by the way, said she's so nervous she's going to throw up. So I'm just going to hug her and tell her...
Well, you're in the right spot
for it. No vomiting.
First of all, Anthony, I love your stash. I want to lick it. That's how much I like it.
Wow. She wants to lick your stash.
Did she say what I think she said?
Yes.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. You made my day.
Okay. You have the option of any musician, living or dead, to rock the sock. Who would it be and why?
Who would I want to rock the sock?
Yeah.
Living or dead? I'm going to go ahead and bring Hillel back from the other side and ask Hillel Slovak to rock the sock.
What a
one
beautiful
more time.
Answer.
That's very, very nice.
He killed the sock, this kid.
Thank you very much. Are any of those socks saved for posterity, like in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or anything like that?
I hope not. You're probably going to have to direct that to Cynthia.
Yes.
That question.
Yes.
The Smithsonian has got a little vial of scrotum lint.
Oh, good.
They've been collecting it through the years.
Yeah, I think
yours and Thomas Jefferson's in a little booth.
I think you should have called the album that, by the way.
The Bush family maybe collect some of our earlier.
Hey.
Yes, Alex.
What?
Yes.
Karina. All right. First off, just thank you for your music, guys. I think I speak for all of us. And second, I don't want to put you on the spot if there's any legalities, but why haven't you claimed your Hollywood Walk of Fame star yet? We're all waiting for it.
I would love to be in the Hollywood Boulevard Walk of Fame star. I don't know why, because I would just, we grew up walking the streets of Hollywood Boulevard.
And, I'm pretty sure I took a nap on Danny Thomas once.
Yeah, I've, peed on him. That would be the greatest, funnest thing to do. Because if anything, I'm not a real patriotic person. You know, I mean, I love the United States, don't get me wrong, but just no more than I love Zimbabwe or, New Zealand. But I really feel a romantic attachment to Hollywood and would love
peace
for that to happen.
Peace has come to Zimbabwe.
Yeah, so.
Join as children in Jah.
That needs to happen, by the way. You guys could get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, but of course you can't suggest it. Your people need to. The record company or somebody needs to put up the dough and make it happen.
Maybe you can help champion it for us.
Yeah, there you go.
You already champion. Do. You've already been nominated. You just haven't claimed
who do we
it.
Need to talk to?
I don't know. Walk of Fame star person.
Okay, we'll talk
to you. All right, thanks for that info.
Somebody get Jodie Foster on the line.
This has been fantastic, you guys. Thank you so much for the time. We know how busy you are with everything going on with the release of I'm With You out today, but so much fun to sit down with some of you. It's been a while since we've seen, and it's congratulations on the new record. We're so psyched. Thanks to you guys for coming out for Breakfast with Red Hot Chili Peppers. I think we got time for maybe one more song to say goodbye to. What do you guys think? Let's do it.
waiting for Danny McCurley singing song beneath the marquee of a soul. By the way, I tried to say I'd be there waiting for.
Lots of love. Thank you very much. Y'all were rocking and fun to be with. God bless.
Next hour here on the Kevin and Bean Show, we're going to talk to a man named Eric Hirschberg, whose name you don't know, neither did I, until it was explained to me that he is the CEO of the Activision company. They're the guys behind Call of Duty. And don't you know that Modern Warfare 3 is getting ready to come out, and it's going to be a worldwide sensation. So we'll get some inside details on what's involved in that, plus the movie beat coming up because it's Friday. And we've got an update on those crazy robots that we told you about yesterday with the artificial intelligence that can talk to each other. We got more on that story later today on the Kevin and Bean Show.
First, let's talk about Jersey Shore and the situation. This was one of the most bizarre episodes of TV I've ever seen in my life, where he runs into the wall head first to get away from
Ronnie
getting beaten out by Ronnie. Ronnie's all angry because he told his girlfriend that Ronnie was out. You know, he had five other girls lined up or whatever. So he gets all mad at Situation. And Situation, to avoid the fight, turns and runs into a wall head first. The wall, of course, was cement.
Yep.
And
yes,
he went to the hospital. But he was doing that, I guess, so that Ronnie would think he's crazy and then wouldn't beat him up or something.
Later in the episode, he explains that he had success with that approach before. He said, I was in a bar once, and a guy wanted to fight me who was way bigger than Ronnie, and that's what I did, is I put my head through, and it turned out to be a plaster wall that time, and the guy backed off. The guy was like, this dude's crazy enough to put his own head through a wall. I don't want to mess with this guy. So that was what the Situation was thinking. He, of course, didn't know that the wall was going to be made of concrete and it was going to knock him out practically and send him right to the hospital. And that was a bad surprise for him. But, I mean, look, I wouldn't do it. And I would think that my chances would be – I certainly wouldn't do it if I knew it was concrete, because you got to imagine that the damage that could be done from running your head into the concrete wall is probably worse than whatever Ronnie's going to do to
you.
But he didn't know. He was panicked, and he was weighing it.
Yeah, but if I'm – I'm just trying to put myself in that situation. That thought never comes into my head. Like, right. I don't have to go, no, I'm not going to put my head through the wall because it might – I don't have to have that conversation because it never even comes into my mind. But this is a little bit of the audio of Ronnie, who's scared Situation out of his mind.
You want to do it? You want to throw my fence? Yeah. You want to throw my fence? Yeah. You want to do it?
Stop.
Bro, I got you, bro. Out of here, bro. Out of here.
So he runs into the wall head first.
Mike bashed his head into the wall. And I could tell Mike is completely disoriented. He's opening his eyes to me, but he's giving me a blank look.
That's the best thing that has ever happened on that show. I mean, it's hard to even get your head around the concept of, I thought I was going to get beaten up, so I ran headfirst into a wall.
We wanted to talk about people who have done crazy things to get out of something. Ralph was joking a few minutes ago about swallowing, putting an Alka-Seltzer in his mouth to pretend like he was foaming at the mouth to get out of getting married. But, I mean, that is the kind of thing that we're looking for. Like a last-ditch effort. I know this is insane, but I have to do something that's going to prevent me from taking a test or getting fired or you know, or getting married or whatever it is you're trying to get or getting in a fight, whatever it is you're trying to get out of. I mean, you know, one example from also from TV, but this was, you know, this was not a reality show. This was scripted, is on 30 Rock last season. Tina Fey's character, Liz Lemon, gets called into jury duty, and she desperately doesn't want to serve on a jury, just like most Americans. So she shows up dressed like Princess Leia. She's got the outfit on with the buns on her head, and she keeps talking all about Star Wars stuff because I'm going to act crazy so that they don't make me get on this jury. That was what her thinking was. That's the kind of thing that we're looking for right now.
I have a friend. I can't say his name. Let's just call him Beer Mug, who was trying to get out of going to work because he was drunk.
Uh-huh.
And so he slashed all four tires on his work vehicle.
Oh, my God. And so that he could say, not my fault, yes, somebody else, you know, somebody else. Oh, wow.
I'm drunk. I can't go into works, but I can't say that or I'll be fired.
Right.
So this happened to me. Wow, those bad guys that did this.
Oh, my God.
Why would they do this? And then he called in sick. And Beer Mug still works here to this day. How strange is that?
I don't believe it was actually Beer Mug that did that. But every year you hear stories about people who either pull a fire alarm or call in a bomb threat to a school because they haven't studied for a test. That's a perennial. That always happens. But I know our audience, and I know the desperate situations that they get into. I know how often their backs are against the wall and they are unprepared for something. And I bet we've got some stories out there at 1-800-520-1067 that people can share with us.
It's hard to beat running headfirst into a cement wall.
Well, it is.
I believe in our listeners.
You think
I
they
think
can
they
top
could
it?
Do it? Yeah, I really do.
Oh,
well,
they're F-ups. There's no question about that.
Whatever it is, you're trying to get out of a fight or a test or a relationship or whatever, you lie to somebody and you do something ridiculous to back it up. That's what we want. 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your calls.
Hey, party people, you're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on a Friday. We were just recapping one more time situation, running his head into a concrete wall while Jersey Shore was filming in Italy. He did it to appear crazy enough that Ronnie wouldn't beat the crap out of him. So he was going to lose either way. He just figured there's going to be pain either way. I might as well go for this and maybe I'll get out of something worse from Ronnie.
And not to mention that MTV did sell it as Ronnie beat up the situation for a year
ahead
of time. But it's all we've been hearing about since I was a little kid is wait till you see this fight. And then, of course, there was no fight at all. It was all self-inflicted. So we're talking to you about crazy things you did to get out of something. And it looks like you were dead on, Lisa. Our listeners are coming through at 1-800-520-1067. Who's first?
All right, let's start with Diego. Hi, Diego.
Hey, what's going on, Kevin and Bean? Hey, Lisa.
Hello.
What were you trying to get out of first?
I got out of a fight at a bar. I was hitting on a girl that I did not know had a boyfriend, and she didn't give me any signs or anything that she had a boyfriend or anything, and then next thing you know, he showed up, and he's one of those, like, muscle builder, I go to the gym every 10 minutes type of guy. I mean, he's huge.
He could crush you in a second, okay?
Pretty much, yeah. So we stepped outside because I'm like, okay, I can't look like a punk, anything like that, but then we get outside, I'm like, oh, man, he's gonna beat the crap out of me. So I just decided, like, okay, screw it. I just started stripping down, and I got naked.
You took off all your clothes?
I took off all my clothes. Like, come on, mother effer, let's go, man. I'm gonna beat you up. Let's go, dude. Let's go.
Was he confused?
And he's just looking at me like, wow, this guy is absolutely insane.
That's brilliant. Did it work?
It worked.
Sweet.
And he walked away and was like, okay, dude, whatever, man. You're sick. You're gay.
He was afraid.
And the funniest part is I'm breathing a sigh of relief. The cops showed up.
Oh, sweet. Did you get a ticket?
No, actually, arrested? I explained to the cop what happened, and he was like, okay, dude, put your clothes on and go home.
Awesome.
That's fantastic. So, look, nobody wants to get into a fight with a naked dude. Let's face it.
That's a 10 right there on the scale.
Yeah.
That works.
No, that's brilliant. Seriously, outstanding work. Nice job. Thank you very much for the call.
The only way that could have been better is if he did it in the bar. That would have been better. All right, let's go to Michelle. Hello, Michelle.
Oh, hey, guys. Good morning. It's me.
Good morning.
What were you trying to get out of?
I was actually trying to get out of a fight at the bar, too. A girl was kind of challenging me. She was real drunk, so.
So you're trying to get out of it? Okay.
Oh, please tell me this ends with you getting naked, Michelle.
Well, I did. I took off my shirt and had no bra on and just started going up to her and bumping her and go, let's go. Come on. Let's
go. This is a fantastic trend.
What a great trend.
What the hell made you think to do that, though?
Well, I've seen guys do it when they get in fights. They take off their wife beater or whatever. So I thought, hey, take off my shirt. You know,
that's no different.
And by the way, thank you for the call. We very much appreciate always hearing from our listeners in Riverside. It's a treat for us.
Come on. I'm just guessing. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Let's go to Matt, who has quite a unique story. Hi, Matt.
What's up, you guys?
What were you trying to get out of first?
I was trying to get out of my psychology final, which I hadn't studied for at all because I was studying for my five other finals.
All right. This is college or high school?
This is high school.
High school. Okay.
I mean, everybody else was kind of, you know, spur of the moment. Mine is a little more premeditated. I actually went number one in front of the entire class. I just sat down, wet myself, and then stood up, and the teacher saw the big wet spot around my pants, and he just let me go for the day.
So
he just let me go.
Okay, so you planned this ahead of time and went to the class where they were just about to take the final?
Yes.
And then did that. And he let you go and get out of the test?
He did, and he let me remake the test, yeah.
Did he, I mean, was there any kind of a debriefing? Did he come to you and say, hey, what's going on? Are you sick? Are you having a problem? Or, I mean, or did he just look at the wet spot and say, get the hell out of my class?
No, he just looked and he told me to come up to his desk, and I came up and he was like, you do realize that you let yourself, right? And I said, yeah, I'm aware of that, but we have a final, you know, completely understandable. And he said, you take this one out, you just go home and you...
Come on with that, right?
Here's what's awesome, none of them have failed yet.
That's right.
Thank you,
Matt. Act crazy, apparently, is the answer from today's Kevin and Bean Show. Take that away for this.
Who knew the situation was right? All right, let's go to Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how's it going, guys? How's it to me?
Hi.
You were going to avoid a fight as well, right?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of redundant now. But at a bar, kind of like your first caller, was sitting on a girl. Boyfriend was there, apparently, with two of his friends. So it was a 3-on-1. I actually was with friends, but they had to take our drunk friend home.
Good.
I don't think any of this is relevant to the story, but go ahead. What'd you do to get out of the fight?
Where did your friend live that they had to take her home to?
I don't think we need any more details from this guy.
Okay.
Right. Did you also strip naked, or is it something different?
No nakedness in the story. But basically, they approached me. You know, everything's ready to go, so I grabbed.
How many steps from where they were until they got to where you are?
Mark, what did you do to get out of the fight?
Grabbed a beer bottle and smashed it over my head.
That's all we needed.
All right.
Here's a great lesson for everybody listening. Hey, Kevin Mead, I had to get out of a fight too, so I grabbed a beer bottle and smashed it over my head. Do you see how simple and painless that was?
Now, Mark, right? Did it work? Did you get out of the fight?
Yes, they backed off. I got a free shot and 4 stitches in my head.
Sweet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah, because you know, you see it happen on TV. Those are not real bottles. You hit yourself in the head with a real bottle. You got trouble.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Wilbur. Hopefully he was listening on how to tell a story. Hi, Wilbur.
Hey, Kevin and Bean, Lisa May, how y'all doing?
Good.
What were you trying to get out of?
I just wanted to get out of school. And
just a regular day?
Just a regular day,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And so me and my friends, you know, we smoke cigarettes or chew tobacco. And when you chew the tobacco, and then you have the leftover spit,
yeah.
If you swallow it, it makes you nauseous. And so I would swallow it, make myself nauseous, and then I'd make sure that my mom heard me throw up my breakfast.
Right.
And then I would leave it in the toilet just so she could see it and verify it.
Oh, wow, that's a commitment right there.
It only lasts for about an hour or so, and then, you know, I got the whole rest of the day to watch cartoons.
You're fine, and you can hang out.
Couldn't you just pretend to throw up?
Well, my mom worked in a hospital, so she knew, like, symptoms and all that stuff.
You got to go the extra step if she works in a hospital.
Dear God.
See, this is a step beyond Ferris Bueller taking the thermometer and holding it up to the light bulb so it looked like you had a fever. Now you're making yourself vomit.
Right,
well done.
One more. Let's go to Jay. Put you on hold. Thank you. All right, Jay.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
You were trying to get out of what?
A Mexican funeral.
A Mexican funeral.
Yes, I don't know if you've ever been one of those. It's the longest experience of your life. It lasts like 5 days, and it just goes on and on and on and on.
Did you not know this person or not care?
No, it's my ex-girlfriend, but to be honest with you, I was at the brink of just letting her go, but you know, it's nice, whatever. I took a laxative in the morning, and I just kind of waited for her to kick in.
And then?
You know, a couple hours later, what do you think it happened?
Same as the other guy in your pants?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. And then? Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, I had to excuse myself, go home, take a shower, and I thought it was over. But, you know, like I said, Mexican funerals are never over. I had to come by the next day, you know, to do the whole viewing and everything, and it was terrible.
So 5 days in a row you had to poop your pants?
Yeah, and it still didn't work, man. I still couldn't get out of it.
Beer mug here at the red car premiere of Harold and Kumar, a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. Let's see what we can get.
You sounded... Hey, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show here on the world-famous K-Rock. You sounded drunk or stoned before you even began,
hey,
Beer Mug. Before
come
the
on.
First interview, you sounded faded. What was going
that
on? What
was not faded. That was nerves.
What? How nervous can you be by yourself talking? Listen, Ralph, thank you for coming in. Listen to this. Listen to how Beer Mug, listen to how Beer Mug begins this one.
Beer Mug here at the red car premiere.
Red car premiere. I'm at the red car premiere.
Doesn't he sound like a guy who's just been to war for 4 years and he's making a battlefield proclamation?
It was the same thing at the Halloween pep parade. He's like, Beer Mug at the Halloween pep parade. How much dope do you smoke?
Only on the weekends. But look, I was nervous. I was by myself. I was interviewing celebrities.
You weren't interviewing celebrities by yourself. You were by yourself in the beginning.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of interviewing celebrities, no bigger celebrity name in the Harold and Kumar Christmas movie than Amir Blumenfeld.
Oh, Amir. You landed Amir Blumenfeld?
Can you believe it?
Let's see what Beer Mug has to say. I guess he's one of the actors in the film. Let's see where Mugs takes this hard-hitting interview.
If there's anything you can tell the K-Rock listeners who are interested in getting to acting, what are some of the maybe secrets that you could divulge?
Okay, why would you ask a guy we've never heard of to tell our listeners how to become an actor?
Because he's an actor. I mean, are you in Harold and Kumar? I know he is. He's an actor.
So you thought you'd say, if I want to be a star like Amir Blumenfeld,
yep.
are there any secrets that he can divulge?
Yep.
I see.
I don't know what Mr. Blumenfeld's answer was, but Beer Mug did follow up with a more precise question about his role in the film.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. And it's the third one in the installment. Anything we can expect from this movie, like wacky, like over the top?
Anything we can expect from this movie?
Third one in the installment, by the way. It's not a third installment in the franchise. It's the third one in the installment.
You know what I meant. You
it's a movie in a movie.
Anything we
can expect any comedy in this comedy? That's what he asked him, basically.
Anything over the top or wacky? All right, William Ross steps up to the microphone next with Beer Mug.
William Ross?
He apparently is the guy who did the music for the film, Ralph. And Muggs gives him one of the best introductions I think I've ever heard.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you think of composers, John Williams, Danny Elfman, Hans Zimmer come to mind. But I am standing here with the composer of Harold and Kumar.
I know all those guys, and they're wonderful.
Okay, have you, first of all, where do I even begin with this? Have you forgotten his name? Because you certainly never say it.
Yeah.
And second of all, why do you bring a no-name music composer on and then hit him immediately with the giants of the industry? Look, why do you bring up John Williams and Hans Zimmer and all these guys who are legends?
When I think of the composers, I think of famous, talented guys. And then there's this guy.
Look, I think if you're a composer for any major studio motion picture, you deserve a little credit.
But you don't give him any credit. You give John Williams and Hans Zimmer and Danny Elfman credit.
Yeah.
Well, you tout them and then throw it to this guy, completely unrelated.
And completely unannounced. You don't even say who he is. And God bless him, by the way, for trying to play along by saying, hey, I even know those guys. Those guys are good guys. I mean, because you're basically just saying, hey, you're not in this league at all, but you're the guy I've got to talk to. How embarrassing for him, right? But at least when you did get around to introducing him, you did it beautifully.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ross Williams, the composer of a very Harold and Kumar. William Ross, I'm sorry. Sorry, William.
Oh, man.
And by the way, you're going to notice a theme. That interview is one of them. Muggs never mics the people he's interviewing either. Have you noticed that you can't even hear the other dudes,
well,
right?
Who cares what they have to say?
All right. I guess there's a plot point in the new movie, the Harold and Kumar movie. And we've seen it in the trailer a little bit where the boys get their wee-wees stuck on an icy pole, just like the classic Xmas story, Christmas story movie, right, Ron?
Right, exactly, where the tongue is stuck on the pole.
Well, the little kid whose tongue was stuck on the pole in that classic movie was at the premiere the other night. How about that?
Scotty Schwartz?
Scotty Schwartz was there,
wow.
And Beer Mug interviewed the great Scotty Schwartz.
Scotty, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It was good. You just kind of walked up, and we started talking.
Well, you
you got a friendly face.
Absolutely. And Scotty, you're in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. They used the clip from Christmas Story of the tongue in the pole, and as you see in the advertising, they've been using the two guys with something stuck to the pole, so... There you go.
That is amazing.
That is amazing.
You came up and started talking to me, and here you are talking to me.
What? You are retarded.
What? You understand that's what happens at all of these red carpet beers, right? That's what everybody expects,
yeah.
Is that you're there with a microphone. They're there to be interviewed for the premiere.
You know, everybody you talked to came up to you and started talking to you.
Sure.
That process was repeated over and over again.
But Scotty was the only one not pitched to me. He was just walking
through. Of course
through.
He wasn't pitched to you. He was in a movie 30 years ago and hasn't worked since. He's looking to talk to anybody he can.
Okay. Now, I have no idea what this question was supposed to be, but here's more with Scotty.
Now, what have you seen the movie?
Not yet. I will in about an hour.
Do you know what to expect? Or
hilarity?
Wow. And you start as a child actor.
He started as a child actor.
I didn't know where to go after that.
He was in a movie where he was, what, about five? How old was he in that film, Christmas Story?
Five, about 10, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know where to go after that. I didn't have any material.
Have you seen the movie?
No.
What do you expect? So you started as a child actor?
No, Muggs, I started as an adult, and then I went backwards and became a child actor in the
70s. Good point.
Oh, you started as a child actor.
For other child actors trying to get up in the business, I mean, I'm too old now, but what advice do you have?
Why would you ask these questions?
I don't know. There's nothing wrong with saying goodbye, Muggs.
I know.
Nothing wrong with it.
I know.
All right. We are out of time for now. I know.
No!
It's so sad, but
Play them all.
Muggs talks to the director of the film. He talks to the creators of the franchise. He talks to Danny Trejo, Machete himself.
We not playing those now?
Well,
who's next? What do we got next?
We're talking to the Digital Dialogue. Are you going to reschedule him and come back? Because I'd love to get these on.
Damn,
I will tell you that.
Maybe we got to push Digital Guy.
We may have to, because that's an evergreen. But
yeah,
this,
you're not going
to
make us wait like till Monday or something.
We got to do it. We got to come back and play more interviews.
You're not going to believe this based on what you've already heard, but it does it does get better. Those videos on the internet are correct. It gets better. All right. More with Beer Mug and the red carpet premiere of Harold and Kumar when we return on the Kevin and Bean Show. We're talking about Beer Mug on the red carpet a couple of nights ago for the Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas movie. Here's a brief montage of what you've missed so far if you're just joining us.
Beer Mug here at the red carpet premiere. That's awesome. Premiere. That's fantastic. And it's the third one in the installment. Anything we can expect from this movie, like wacky, like over the top? Ladies and gentlemen, when you think of composers, John Williams, Danny Elfman, Hans Zimmer come to mind. But I am standing here with the composer of Harold and Kumar. Now, have you seen the movie?
Not yet. I will in about an hour.
Do you know what to expect? Or wow. And you start as a child actor.
Okay, so that's where we left off on Fear Bug with the red carpet.
That's all we have time for.
That's good. Oh, man.
Now we're starting to get into the heavy-duty celebrities involved with the Harold and Kumar film. Todd Strauss-Schulzen is the director of the movie. Now, I think you're going to recognize Muggs' tact from earlier when he was speaking with the composer.
When I think of directors.
Well, let's see, Ralph.
All right. I am here with the director of a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas, Mr. Todd Strauss-Schulzen. How are you doing, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty intense.
Now, when I think of huge director...
How did this go this way, Muggs? How did this happen?
Well, apparently I thought it worked with the composer.
It did.
But, yeah.
All right, let's see how Todd takes it.
Now, when I think of huge directors, Spielberg, who else? Who else comes to mind, Todd?
Are you just... Todd, who else comes to mind?
What other directors do you know, Todd? That aren't here standing next to me.
Is the point that you want to name everybody who didn't want to do the Harold and Kumar movie? Is that what you're trying to do here?
I don't know.
Huge directors? Yeah. I mean, Robert Zemeckis is a pretty big director. Paul Thomas Anderson is great.
J.J. Abrams?
You're just going to make it a parlor game? You're just going to stand out there whole
famous
night?
Directors.
It's a trivia game. How many directors can you name in 30 seconds? Go. Does he win a prize?
What? He's got to be thinking, what's happening right now?
Oh, man. Let's talk about other directors that are standing next to me.
James Cameron is a very big-time director, big 3D director.
Now, Michael Bay.
All right, we've named them all.
Is he just mocking you now?
That was fun.
And what do any of these have to do with Harold and Kumar? Okay, so Michael Bay. Now, Muggs, you know the way Muggs' mind works. It starts off blank, and then he just keeps talking until something catches, and he goes, oh, I can do something with that. And I think that's what's happened. I think the light bulb went off over his head when he thought of Michael Bay.
Michael Bay? Can we expect, speaking of Michael Bay, can we expect any huge explosions in A Very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas?
Well, they are known for that.
Seriously, Muggs? Hey, I just thought of Terrence Malick. Are there any shots of waves of grain in the sun in this Harold and Kumar movie? Because that's another director who does a completely different kind of movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love that so much.
Oh, God.
All right. John Hurwitz and Hayden Schlossberg. I am unfamiliar with them, except for the fact that they are apparently the creators of Harold and Kumar back in the beginning. Let's see what Muggs has for them.
How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
By the way, I want to again point out, barely miking the people that he's interviews. You hear Mug pretty well. You don't hear them very much at all, right?
Right.
How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
Excellent.
Fantastic. Let me ask you a question.
He is so out, by the way. He's so out. He's got nothing.
You take an Asian guy and an Indian guy, marijuana, hilarity then ensues.
That's not a question.
Is that a question?
It's not even a little bit of a question.
It's
more of a statement, yeah.
What did you want them to say to that? What was your hope at the end of that?
I don't know.
Mother of pearl, this is unbelievable.
This is all in one 15-minute period. David Krumholtz is in the movie, Muggs?
Yes.
Who's he in Harold and Kumar? Do we have any idea?
Goldstein. He plays Harold and Kumar's buddies.
Okay, let's see what you got for him.
Well, listen, David. I loved you in Slums of Beverly Hills.
Okay, you can't really hear him.
Is he there?
Refuses
via satellite?
But he says, Mug says, I love you in that movie, and he says it was 14 years ago. Listen.
I loved you in Slums of Beverly Hills.
That was 14 years ago.
I know. And you know what? I'm going to go even further back. Adam's Family Values. Yeah.
Do you like any of my recent work?
Haven't seen any of your recent work, David.
Okay. Why even do that to him?
Oh, yeah, man.
That was bad.
It's a gut shot to David Krumholtz.
Yeah.
Who has starred on Numbers, by the way, on CBS. A very successful series for a couple seasons now.
He's a hit in primetime right now. Muggs doesn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the first legitimate, real interview of the whole night, an actual conversation where I felt that the guys understood one another. He's talking to the great Danny Trejo. He is Machete, of course, and is in all sorts of movies. He's always great. Muggs definitely has something to say to him.
You are a busy man, sir.
A busy man has time to do everything.
You're the man. Danny, you are the man. And I'll tell you, you seem like a sweet guy in real life. And let me ask.
I just spit up my iced tea, by the way. I literally have iced tea coming out of my nose right now. So you see Danny Trejo, and you've got you're the man, you seem like a sweet man. And then, obviously, your mind is completely blank, right?
How could you tell?
You got nothing.
And let me ask you one last question, and I'll let you go. How can I become... I'm Jewish. Could I become an honorary, tough, badass Mexican?
Okay, at least he's tried. At least he's got something, right? It's not good, but it's something.
The guy that put the tattoo on my chest, we did it in San Quentin, and his name was Harry Super Jew Ross.
Really? So I can be like a Jewsikin.
Absolutely.
Danny, you're the man, dude.
All right,
Jewsikin. Jumex. Jumex.
All right, we're near the end of the Harold and Kumar.
No, I never want this to end. Go back and play Jumex
again for me.
After Juice again, he goes, Jumex.
Harry Super Jew Ross.
Really? So I can be like a Juicekin.
Absolutely.
Jumex. Danny, you're the man, dude.
Yeah, Juicekin. All right. Now we're talking to stars, ladies and gentlemen. John Cho, he is Harold in the film. Muggs, what do you have for John?
Let me ask you a question, John. I'm a stoner myself. Don't tell anybody. My bosses, Kevin and Bean, always seem to think I'm stoned. Now, you're a businessman. Real life and in, art.
Okay. I feel like you're doing an essay question, like a train leaves Chicago at 6 and it's going 300 miles an hour. I mean, you're just making them. All right, you're a
one thing is for sure. If Mug says can I ask you a question, I guarantee you no question will be following.
There's a question.
I'm a stoner, and I have bosses, and you're a businessman in art. None of those are questions.
And I'm a Jew. And how can I be a Jew second?
Yeah. What do I do to tell them that I'm not stoned at work? How do I prove that to them?
That's an impossible question to answer.
Again, what did you want the man to say? What were you hoping for?
How can I tell them I'm not stoned?
Cal Penn is Kumar with Beer Mug on the red carpet.
Now, like I heard you talking to KCAL 9. Not to make this all serious, but they made it to give light, you know, to show.
What?
We didn't hear him talking to KCAL 9, so we have no idea what you're talking about here.
Not to make this all serious, but they made it to give light, you know, to show everybody that you guys are normal dudes. And I think I'm about to shed a tear because I think that's very, very touching. And
what?
I want to say I'm a big fan.
What?
I don't know. Channel 9 showed that you were normal to me, and I'm so touched, and I'm a big fan.
I give up.
I want to shed a tear over that other interview you just did. That was better than this one. That I was listening to.
Ladies and gentlemen, Beer Mug on the red carpet.
Thank you.
Kevin, I know last weekend you were excited to go see the Immortals, and you did, right?
Yes, sir. Awesome.
Well, I'm so glad you said that because Mickey Rourke is on the phone. It would have been very embarrassing if you would have said it was bad.
It was Mickey all good Rourke. Except for Mickey.
Thank you so much for joining us. Mickey plays King Hyperion in the America's number one film called The Immortals, number one at the box office last weekend. So, Mickey, how are you? Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend. What's going on?
Really good, you know, just hanging and swinging, brother.
You know, it's so funny. We've been lucky enough doing this job for a long time to talk to many actors, and oftentimes they have no idea whether the material that they are drawn to is going to connect with the public. Like Immortals is a perfect example. There must be a reason you liked it. Are you surprised it's such a big hit?
Yes and no, really. I mean, the director was really special. I don't know, like a couple of years ago, he did a, I don't know if you saw those Nike commercials where they had all the athletes from various sports and doing their thing with the masks on and everything.
Yeah, and then they ran into another field and became another athlete or whatever that was?
Something like that, yeah. Well, I saw that because the director comes out of commercials, okay? And which is a good sign because he already knows how to light and do that kind of thing.
That is a good sign because it seems to me like that would worry you a bit.
No, it wouldn't worry. Well, it wouldn't worry me. It's the fact that, you know, he makes his living also doing commercials, so he's got a lot of experience working with the camera and doing very innovative things.
Oh, I see. And, okay.
You know, so I thought if I'm going to do this movie, I want to do it, you know, in the business we call guys like that who know how to light and everything.
And that's why you took the role?
I took the role mainly because I knew this director was, he's like, kind of like in a class with guys that you want to work with now, in that genre.
Now, once you shoot the movie and you have the bow of, how do you say it, Epirus?
The Epirus bow.
Epirus bow. You have that, and of course there's no arrows. He has to add that later, and you're faking it. And I mean,
I did have to pull the bow.
Yes,
well, you
did.
Pull the bow back, and then, you know, they digitally put it in later. Yeah.
I know, but what I'm saying is, did you feel like, wow, I'm really hoping that this guy comes through because it could look bad?
No, I really didn't.
You
care.
Didn't think that?
Yeah, I didn't care.
I didn't care. That's their job to do. You know, if they don't do it, then shame on them.
Right, but I knew.
Okay, we actually can't still use the SH word on the air, Mickey. Right. I'm sorry. We had to dub you a couple of times here. The beautiful thing about a guy like you and why people are so fascinated with you, I think, is A, you make interesting film choices. B, we do get the impression that you don't care what people think, which is so refreshing in this business. Doesn't it seem like, and you deal with Hollywood a lot more than we do, that everybody is so careful about everything they say all the time that there's no real personality much out there anymore.
Well, you know, I've noticed over the years, even if you're a working star or so-called movie star, right, wood still floats. So a lot of them worry about, am I going to get another job?
Right.
You know, so I like
and that's why
the expression, wood floats, you know?
Right.
Because they can last, a lot of actors can last a long time on no talent at all, really.
No, I agree with that. But you certainly have been there.
Say that again? You agree with that? Good.
I absolutely agree with that. There are so many terrible actors that you can't believe still keep getting work year after year after year.
We could go down the list, but they'll kill me.
Let's do. Let's just pick the biggest offender.
No, they'll
hang
back my fruit basket.
Look, I know this is completely off topic, Mickey, but we've been talking on the air a lot this week. We like Adam Sandler a lot. We've had him on the show a bunch of times. He seems like a really, really nice guy. But the fact like a movie like that gets made and people go see it just blows my mind. Like, I can't get my head around a movie that bad being as popular as it is. I don't understand Hollywood. I don't know how anybody can figure out what's going on anymore.
Well, you know, lots of times movies like Immortals come by and the material was pretty good to read. And I think because of this director's, you know, history, even though he's a relatively new director, Tarsem Singh, people have taken note and know who he is. They know that he's very talented, that he's a shooter, and that he's going to take this material that we're reading and he's going to transcend the material and make something really special. That's why he can go out there and attract like a Frida Pinto here or a John Hurt there, you know, and put a really good, interesting cast together.
Right. Let me ask you a bigger, overreaching question, our remaining moments on the phone with Mickey Rourke here on the Kevin and Bean Show today, and that is, you're a guy who spent some time away from Hollywood. You had trouble finding a job at one point. Is that something you think about a lot now in the choices that you make? Do you worry that that will happen to you again, or do you feel like you're in a better place now to continue to make the kind of decisions that will keep you working?
Well, I think everybody I pissed off years ago, 20 years ago, is probably out of the business or dead. So... thank God there's these new guys like Tarsem that come along and they're not worried about what mistakes I made 20 years ago. And yeah, sure, I've always got to watch, you know. Shut up, you, my dog. easy, guys. They're not used to hearing me talk at this hour. They don't know what's going on. They're all freaked out. I forgot what I was talking
about.
You
outlasted everybody that you might have made mad.
Yeah, probably. Pretty much. Or pissed off. And, so, you know, yeah, I still got to watch out, you know, and not
We were talking about before we brought you on this run of movies, The Expendables and The Iron Man 2 and the Wrestler, of course, and Sin City. And you've made some other smaller movies, too, that, you know, that people have liked as well. I mean, you are on one of the best runs of your career right now. And it's so refreshing to have a guy like you out there who's unpredictable, who, you know, we can be excited to see what the next move is. And God bless you. I'm glad you're still doing it, Mickey.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I mean, I hope the people like the Immortals is the kind of movie you go to. You have a really good time. Guys seem to really like the movie. You know?
It's a good ride.
Even the girls like it because there's a lot of, like, you know, great-looking guys in the movie with their shirts off, you know.
And there's Frida Pinto, who's pretty hot.
Frida Pinto, yeah. So, you know, the lead is swinging in this movie.
Immortals is in theaters everywhere. Don't be suckered into going to Twilight. Go see the Immortals instead. Mickey Rourke, thanks so much for joining us on the Kevin and Bean Show. We enjoyed talking
to you. Okay, take care, guys.
Thanks, Foo Fighters, on the world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ, with Incubus, Pumpkins, Sublime, and Silver Sun pickups coming up. By the way, both Harold and Kumar will be here tomorrow, actors John Cho and Cal Penn, talking about the Christmas movie that they have coming out with Neil Patrick Harris. Looks so funny. All right. Many people in our audience, I won't say no one, are really thinking about the election, the presidential election next year. It's about 13 months away now.
Yes.
But I miss Larry Flint. I miss when Larry Flint used to get involved. Like, where's Larry Flint out there with the Herman Cain sex tape? You know what I mean? That's the type of stuff that he used to come up with or used to talk about.
Yeah, he's letting us down.
He's letting us down. Where's Larry Flint been? He, of course, is the famous publisher of pornography for all these decades. He founded Hustler magazine. suffered an assassination attempt that put him in a wheelchair in 1978, but he has never slowed down. He continues to be out there crusading for the First Amendment and making great porn for all the world to enjoy. And we're very happy to welcome Mr. Flint back to the Kevin and Bean Show. It's been a long time, but we have a very special reason for having Larry on today. Hi, Mr. Flint. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you guys?
Well, we're great. It's always such a thrill to have you on. I understand that yesterday was a very big day for you, Larry.
Yeah, yesterday was my birthday, so yeah. We're having a lot of celebrations. You know?
Mm-hmm. And not just any birthday, but one that a guy who publishes Hustler magazine would be most excited about?
Yeah, a lot of people have been making jokes because yesterday was my 69th birthday.
Mm-hmm. There it is. I mean, a guy who parties like you, I can't even imagine the stops that you pull out when you have an event like that to celebrate.
You know, a lot of people assume things about me, really, more than this is the reality of it. So I know a lot of people assume because it was, you know, number 69 that I had some sort of wild party. But I was just, we had a little celebration down at the beach. I have a little beach house. And it was a pretty tame affair, all things considered.
Wow. I mean, that is a surprise. But, I mean, a lot of the Hustler honeys were there. I would imagine you still had a ton of chicks at the party,
there,
right?
There were some girls, yeah, that worked for Hustler there. And what I did, because we were at the beach, I had a scuba party, more or less, for all the girls who wanted to scuba dive, so I spent most of the party making sure they were airtight before they understand what's so funny. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, the goggles didn't leak and the regulators were working. So
that's what we were hoping, yeah.
Everything had to be airtight.
Yeah, airtight is the way to go.
Then
we
had a big barbecue on the beach afterwards, and I was feeding the girls sausage and wieners.
Sure, like you do.
Like kielbasa, foot-long, right. Hot
very
dogs.
Right.
I'm not a meat eater myself. I prefer seafood, so I just ate mostly clams. What? I don't understand.
No, it sounds like a really tame, just kind of all-American on the beach party. Sure.
Yeah, of course, because it was my birthday, we had to bring out, you know, the candles and I'm not a big cake fan myself, so they just brought me pie. I just had pie for my birthday.
Yeah, you love pie, Larry. Yeah. That's one thing we know about you, right?
Cream pie especially. That's sure. My favorite. So.
Delicious. Absolutely.
I blew out the candles, and there was so much blowing, actually, because, you know, 69 candles, a lot of candles. So there was blowing and blowing and blowing at the party. It was really,
well, how could there not be? Yeah, and I'm sure the fire marshal standing by, a flame like that gets out of hand, right?
Exactly. So it was quite the event, and we're having a little after party thing. Oh, I think I got guests at the door. Hold on a second. Let me just walk over to the door real quick.
No, Larry, don't. Please don't get up. Don't, Larry, don't. No. You, Larry. Come on. Always forgets.
You think after 69 years I'd remember I can't walk.
.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and it's 27 minutes after 6 o'clock.
Great show. All you other kids, when you're pumped up kids, you better run to your mother.
Hey, Homer.
Yes.
Homer, let me talk here. Great show coming up here on the Kevin and Bean Show, including Joseph Gordon-Levitt, also Adam Carolla of the Week in Rage, and the Long Island Medium will help you talk to your dead ferret on the other side. Okay, Homer. What's going on with you and the other, the rest of the team here, the Simpsons
strike,
family?
Strike! 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 Strike!
What are you striking over?
Money!
They're
what
talking
else did you strike over?
They're talking about canceling the Simpsons after 23 seasons because you guys will not take a 45% pay cut.
That's right. Now I've decided I want more money.
You want more?
I want $8 quadrillion.
That's not a real
and
number.
And one of those flying dragon dogs from Neverending Story.
The voice actors for The Simpsons work a part of 22 weeks throughout the year and make in the ballpark of $8 million a year, but that's not enough.
Woo-hoo! That's exhausting. 22 weeks.
There's not even that many weeks in a year, is there?
Well, there's more than that, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
So here's what has not been talked about, but it has been rumored in the past when the contract negotiations have stalled out, is maybe they keep the Simpsons going. Maybe they keep the same team in place except for the voice actors, and they hire new people to come in and do Homer and Marge and Apu and Lisa and Flanders and all those voices.
Yeah, fat chance.
Well, our
Who
listeners,
could do this voice? Nobody!
Our listeners are very talented, Homer. And we thought we'd throw it open. This could
More
be your
talented than the hosts.
This could, this could be your opportunity. You know, who knows who's listening, or a casting agent might be listening, and your chance to actually audition for a Simpsons voice if you do one of
hey,
them. Hey, give us a call.
You guys aren't on my side at all.
1-800-520-1067. I think you're safe. I just
you're
think
trying to give someone my job.
If they well, do a better job of you than you.
We want the Simpsons to stay on the air. That's what we're about. Of course, we'd much rather have the original the Simpsons voices, but if that can't happen, let's get somebody else in there who sounds like them.
Oh, thanks for all your support.
So if you can do, if you can do this.
Ay, caramba.
All right. Then
Ay, caramba.
No, not you. I'm saying if they can do Bart's voice.
Can I audition for Bart?
Well, this isn't for you to audition.
I want to audition for Flanders.
Okay.
Okey-dokey.
All right, if you can say this.
Howdy, neighbor.
Okey-dokey-doo.
All right, if you can say that, fine. Whatever voice you do, call
I'm
in.
I'm a Christian freak.
At 1-800-520-1067. And,
I'm Marge. Homer's packing where it counts.
Yeah. Homer, you sound like Homer every voice you do.
Oh.
Yeah. We're looking for people that could do, say.
I'll just have a cup of coffee.
I just have a cup of coffee.
No, ask her.
Oh, sorry.
If they could do her voice.
I need
yes,
a job.
You're in deep do now.
Simpson, eh?
Yeah, there you go. Little Mr. Burns. All right, so what Simpsons, thank you, Nelson. What voice can you do for the Simpsons? We want to hear from you. 1-800.
Can you do this one?
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
If you could do that so that it sounds like a Simpson doing it. Not
right,
so that
I'm
it,
confused.
Not so that it sounds like Homer Simpson doing it.
What?
He's really hurt. I think he broke his leg.
Maybe you can do that voice.
I hate that kid.
Give us a call, 1-800-520-1067. We'll take a quick break. If you do an impression of The Simpsons, we'll talk to you.
You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show on a Wednesday. Homer Simpson is here, incredibly.
Yes, yes here I am.
You're going to help us talk Woo-hoo! To some of our listeners who are trying to replace the voice actors on The Simpsons
yes.
because they want too much money, so the show might be canceled.
I'm here to give someone else my job so I will no longer make money.
Okay,
wait a
that's
minute.
Good. I'm glad you realized that.
That's a bad idea.
What is your job at the nuclear power plant, by the way? What exactly do you do?
I am in control of rods.
Rods?
Yes.
I thought that was Lisa's job.
I'm in the rod department.
Okay.
The rod department. Okay. Yes.
Could you be more specific?
Nope.
Okay. All right, so we were asking for Kevin to be listeners who maybe would like to be new voices on The Simpsons if they do end up parting ways, but the show continues. So you can call us at 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we start with John? He's calling, I think, about your wife, Homer. John, welcome to the Kevin to be show. Thanks for calling in, dude.
Homer, where have you been?
Oh, John.
It's not terrible.
You're
not.
Turning me on.
I'll just have a cup of coffee.
I've got donuts.
I've got a chubby.
Wait, this is going.
Oh, yeah. I need you.
Yes. Oh, keep going. I'm almost done.
Oh, come on. I don't think we want any of this. It's cartoon love.
Wow. I saw John was going to do Marge. I thought, what a disaster that
is. Stop talking. You're ruining it.
John, well done, sir. Thank you for the call. All right, let's try Sharud.
We should have a prize for these people.
I know. I wish we did. Sure would make sense to have some Simpsons DVDs or something, but we don't. Sharud is on line 6. This will kill your chubby Homer. Welcome to the show. What's going on, dude?
Marge, when are you going to talk that deadbeat husband of yours?
All right, chubby gone.
Wait, is this Yoda? Do it again.
Marge, when are you going to drop that deadbeat husband of yours?
So it's true. Your hair committed bluicide.
That's Selma?
Yes. Or Patty.
Or Patty?
Yes. Either one. Either way, I hate them.
They're interchangeable?
All yes. Right.
Thank you for the call.
All right, let's try Taryn. Taryn is on line 1.
The Ripping and the Taryn?
No. Well, I'm not sure.
You're more up to date than I thought, Homer.
Woohoo!
Taryn, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to do?
I'm Idaho.
Huh?
Do it again.
I'm Idaho.
I just made an egg in my pants.
Yes.
That's who you're trying to do. Ralph Wiggums, right?
That's the retarded boy.
I don't think... burn things.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not good. But we're glad you called, Tara. Thank you very much for the
Leave
call.
Leave him alone. He's retarded.
1-800-520-1067. Can you be a new Simpsons voice? How about Chris on line two? Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling the Kevin and Bean Show. You're on with Kevin, Bean, Lisa, and Homer.
Simpson, what are you doing with those bumbling DJs?
I'm sorry, Mr. Burns. I'm sorry.
Oh, I will have to fire you.
Oh, I lost two jobs in one day.
What a shame. What a shame. Smithers, get me some other bumbling food.
I like that he takes the phone away from his mouth to talk to Smithers. So
he's playing on an entire thing. I appreciate his commitment.
Bean, would you like to work here at the power plant?
Who, me or Bean?
Lisa.
Lisa. Oh, yeah.
She's also in charge of rods.
If you've got lots of rods, I'm there.
Yes. Radioactive ones.
Very well done, Chris. Thanks for the call. I think we have time for one more. Let's try our man, Tom. Tom is on line one, joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Tom.
Oh. Tom just hung up.
Tom.
Oh.
He was intimidated by Homer.
Tom is in Maine making toothpaste.
Yes, he is. Well, Homer, I hope things don't go south for you. I hope you still have a job.
I don't believe you. You're auditioning people to take my job right in front of me.
Only a couple
of
them.
Hey, Homer, come on the show and let's find someone else to take the jobs away from you and your family. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the support.
You brought up something interesting, I think, off the air yesterday that happened to you when you were in Philadelphia over the weekend. And it leads us into an interesting topic. What happened?
We were just talking about people who spend unnecessary amounts of money on items when a lower cost version of that item would be just as perfectly acceptable in terms of its functionality.
And almost no cost. I mean, it's so, like, you can spend so little on it.
And the greatest example we could come up with was what happened to me this weekend. A friend of mine, we were out, and he, you know, picked up the tab, and he was signing his credit card receipt with his pen. And he said, "Isn't this a great pen? Look at this pen." I said, "Oh, that's an attractive pen. I mean, what do you say about a pen?
I've never really, that category, right?
I've never really thought one way or the other about pens." And he said, "Yeah, it's a Mont Blanc pen. Good deal, and it's only $225. And I went, yeah. What? $225 for a pen?
He said, "Find some water to drink just so you can do a spit take."
He said, "But this is this is a great pen." And I said, "It's a pen. By definition, a pen's job is to put ink on a paper, is just to write your name or a note or something.
Right.
If I've got a Bic that I get at Rite Aid in a six pack for $1.29,
right,
and he's got a $225 Mont Blanc pen, and we both go to write our names and both pens write our names, he's an a-hole." I was flummoxed. I couldn't get over the idea that someone would spend $225 for a pen.
Now, what is it about the $200 pen that he finds so satisfying?
I could not get him to answer that question. I kept asking, what is it? Why would you decide to make that purchase? What is it about that pen that you want? Because he said, I just wanted to have a really nice pen. And I said, but how do you define nice? How much nicer is that pen than, let's go high end. Let me go for like one of those rollerball pens. Let me go nuts over at Staples and pick up a pen that costs $1.29 just in its own
self.
Right. And it's got a nice plastic bubble around it, and a nice piece of backing cardboard, and I pull it off the peg there, and I go up and I put down my $1.29 for that nice
pen. That's a nice pen.
That's a nice pen.
Right.
How much nicer is your pen for $225?
The question.
Does it fillet? Does something happen with this pen that you're not? Is there a feature you're not filling me in on? Because if it's just writing, if that pen's just writing, you are, sir, are an a-hole.
Is he paying for the brand name? I mean, is that basically it? Because how do they talk people into spending that much more?
What name could be worth $225 on a pen? Name?
To him, it's Mont Blanc or however you
but
say
listen,
that.
But listen, it's a pen.
I agree.
The job of the pen, the functionality of the item is to simply deposit ink on a piece of paper.
Well, maybe you just don't know the finer points of pens.
Now, I
don't think it was a 5-point bet.
I can understand if you don't want a really, like, not a Parker or one of the big brand names. If you don't want a ghetto-ass pen that's going to splotch and leave, you know, ink blots or something when you're trying to. I can understand that. But it seems like you're absolutely right, Ralph. I don't think the difference, the functionality between a $2 pen and a $200 pen can be significant.
No.
I don't think I could pick up a piece of paper and tell which pen signed which piece of paper. I'll tell you that.
No.
But if you're worried about that, you get the expensive pen, which is $1.49 or whatever that was.
Yeah,
$1.29.
I mean, does it write, in space? Does it write by itself? Is it a ghost pen?
Does it translate into every language in the world?
And how many pens have you lost in your life, by the way?
All.
Right. I buy pens by the bushel, and I still can't find one in my house or in my bag here at work ever. I'm still asking people to borrow a pen because they're just constantly disappearing. What kind of jackhole do you feel like when you lose a $225 pen?
So was he able to defend it, or was it just like, get away from me, you don't understand, I'm not even going to possibly try to explain it?
I was the idiot. I didn't understand the value of a high-end Mont Blanc pen, how wonderful that was and how excited he was to get it. I was just a philistine. I just couldn't wrap my head around it.
Are there pen snobs? I mean, is this
obviously there must be. He didn't seem like he was a pen collector or anything. He was just really pleased to have a nice pen.
He wasn't trying to be snobby. He was just happy with it.
Yeah.
Right?
I think two things here. One, first of all, in the words of Big Sean, maybe he was working too hard to be balling on a budget. I don't know if you ever thought about that. But second of all, aren't there Mont Blanc pen stores? Haven't I seen that?
Yes.
Like, yeah. In the mall? I mean, like an actual store where that's what they sell as pens, right?
I'm not saying this guy's alone. I think there are people like him out there, obviously, because they do have Mont Blanc pen stores. And, you know, the cross pen for many years was the industry standard, like a nice metal pen that you would carry around and everything. I can understand that there are people who do it, but I just can't understand why they do it, I guess is my problem. And there's a line of items like this across the board that my head explodes when I hear what people are paying for.
Was this guy ultra rich?
No,
so
no.
To him, he wasn't.
No. So he's not poor. I mean, it's
right,
not.
Right, but to him, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that was a solid investment for him. You know,
all right,
my point was, if I was the richest man in the world, if I was Bill Gates, I still wouldn't spend $225 on a pen. there would be other places I would spend that money than on a multi-hundred-dollar pen.
We're going to take some calls at 1-800-520-1067 on this topic. Doesn't have to be pens, but you were starting to say there are other items. I mean, there are people who would argue it's ridiculous to spend $200,000 on a car, yet lots of people do that.
But here's the thing. With cars, I find there is some sort of technological or comfort or luxury advantage to paying for a high-end car. I guess there is a point of diminishing returns where it really doesn't matter if you're getting an $80,000 car or $150,000 car.
Yeah, it's not twice as good.
It's not twice as good,
right.
But you can see where if you're going to get a Kia or something, just for basic transportation, versus like a Bentley or a Rolls or, you know, or BMW. There is a significant difference in quality with that giant leap in cost.
But is there a leap in quality for pens?
That's what I'm saying. There are certain items where there's no leap in quality. I had a friend of mine spend $500 on a wallet once. A wallet! Let me tell you what wallet is. Wallet is a piece of stitched-together leather that holds your money and your license. The exact same function that happens with my $20 Buxton was happening with his $500 whatever brand he was rocking.
And you hide it almost all the time.
Nobody sees your wallet unless they're in your ass or in your pocket. It's not like it doesn't even have the fashion upside where you can flaunt your high-profile wallet.
Right.
Because everyone says, oh, look at that fancy wallet he has, because it's in your ass pocket, so no one sees it.
But
and the function is identical. There's no difference.
It can't hold your money better.
No. You don't open up, and then a little hand comes out from inside the wallet and gives you exactly the bill you're looking for. Oh, here's your five, sir. It's like a caddy on a golf course that gives you your club. Here's your 20. I know you would need a 20 in this case. Here's a little magic leather hand that comes out and hands you the 20. It's the same. I have to go into my wallet just like he goes in for the $500 wallet.
Okay, we got to take a break now. Mike, you hang on. We want to talk to you about your $300 flashlight when we return.
Mike!
But what did you buy, or what do you know people have bought that is in the category of what we're talking about? The really expensive one can't possibly be that much better than the inexpensive one. That's what we want to find out from you. 1-800-520-1067. Your call is coming up next on the Kevin.
Money Wasters! Money Wasters! Money Wasters! Stupid, expensive things are going to happen.
Cha-ching!
Yeah.
Ralph was telling us a story a minute ago about his trip to Philadelphia this weekend. A friend of his bought a pen. Cost how much to what?
$225 And that was a deal. He said he got a deal on it.
A deal?
That was a deal. You got a break. I don't know what it usually runs retail, but he knew a guy.
Here's an email from Phil. There was an older guy at my office who would spend hours on eBay every week trying to find deals on super expensive pens. Thousands of dollars some of these pens were. All he could tell me is that it's like jewelry or a watch.
No.
Status and aesthetics.
No, it's not. You know what's like jewelry? Jewelry. You know what pens are? They're like pens.
Yeah. And jewelry, a watch can have diamonds and everything else on it to make it.
Look, watches, I know I'll get an argument on this, but I will fight the same fight about watches. You can find a reasonably priced watch that tells excellent time versus a $5,000 Rolex or whatever without diamonds and rubies and platinum or whatever. Just a watch tells time exactly the same. It's beyond me how someone will spend the extra thousands of dollars just to say that they have a Rolex on their arm.
But we're looking for more insignificant things like a pen.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Things that people don't even see, like your wallet. Right. For God's sakes.
Let's talk to Mike on line 3. He was kind enough to hold during the song there. Mike has a flashlight that he would like to tell us about. And Mike, I want to make sure we understand we're on the same page here. It's not a fleshlight, right? Because that might be worth the money.
No.
All right. What's the story?
It's a $300 flashlight. I have three of them, actually.
So you spent almost $1,000 on three flashlights.
Yeah, and then batteries. Don't even get me started on batteries.
The batteries, yeah.
He said that like it made it better. I have three of them.
All right, what's going on with this flashlight? Why is it so expensive?
It's a Surefire. It's a military-grade flashlight. I work in the production industry, so when I get blinded by lighting fixtures, it's nice to be able to fight back so I can see what I'm doing to continue doing my job. So
you need a very strong flashlight so that you can fight other people with lights?
Yes.
Well, is it a lightsaber you bought or a flashlight?
What kind of war is going on that we don't know about?
Is it brighter than a normal flashlight?
The sun?
Yes. It's significantly brighter than a normal flashlight. A normal flashlight will run you like 15 or 20 lumens, and
this is like
200, 250.
All right. I can see that. All right.
Yeah.
That's useful. You're okay. You don't have to sell them.
Yeah,
although you don't need three, let's be honest.
No, he needs three. What do the batteries run you for those?
About $3 a piece.
$3 a piece.
Well, hey, he said don't get him started on the batteries.
Well, I had to get him started. I needed to know.
Yeah.
Let's try Brian. Thank you for the call.
All right, Mike. I still don't buy it. I guarantee you can find whatever luminescence he needs on a cheaper flashlight. I guarantee it. Military grade. Unless you're in the military, you don't need anything military grade. Unless you're fighting in Iraq, you don't need anything military grade.
Let's go to Brian on line 6. He's going to take us into another area of expensive items we didn't know existed. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
I have what you call a keyboard slide.
A what?
It's basically a keyboard slide.
What is that?
Is it a key?
Keyboard slide.
Yeah, it's a key. It holds all your keys, and they slide out like as if it was like a knife or something.
It's a key ring.
Yeah.
It's a key ring, essentially.
How much did your key ring cost you?
It cost me about $100 when I was first...
$100 for a key ring.
For a key ring.
Yeah, but it's not like your keys don't jiggle or anything.
Well, for $100, they don't jiggle. It's well worth it.
Yeah,
well. I'd pay $1,000 if my keys didn't jingle, because you know how that ruins your life.
Don't you also need something in your pocket to keep your coins separate from one another so that they don't touch and make noise?
No, well, that's what the fifth pocket is for.
Yeah, that's good. Brian, you're just a ruin of a man.
Thank you for the call. Mark writes in on the Kevin and Bean Facebook page. He bought a Dunhill lighter in England for $350. He put it on his customs declaration form. The U.S. customs agent made him pull it out of the luggage because he had never seen or heard of a lighter that cost that much.
You know
why? It has gold on it or something.
Does it ever run out? If it doesn't run out, it's worth it.
Right. If it's a perpetual lighter forever, then it's worth $300.
Let's talk to Melissa. She's on line 5. I guess chicks are buying crazy things for crazy money, too. Hi, Melissa. Welcome.
Hey, so $75 lollipop.
A $75 lollipop?
Yeah.
Is it an antique of some kind?
I mean, antique lollipop?
No, but I mean like a...
It tasted good, but no, it has like all these little like rhinestones on the stem I got over in Vegas. I want a ridiculous amount of money, so I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to buy something I probably never buy.
And by the way, first of all, if you win it in Vegas, you're entitled to blow it because it's nothing lost,
and that's
man.
Blowing it's, it.
And that is blowing it. But thank you for
that
the call. You know
it.
What, Ralph? We didn't even get into this area, and I'm so glad Melissa brought up the lollipop. What about the people who buy a $5,000 dinner? What about those people, that meal?
Well, I think, again, there is a difference between McDonald's, for some people, and a high-end restaurant with really high-end ingredients and food that is made by an expert chef. I mean, some people can tell the difference. I'm a foodie, so I can appreciate paying for a meal that's great. Because there is a difference in quality between one restaurant or another.
I agree there is between fast food and a high-end meal. How much of a difference is there between a good restaurant and a ridiculous, you know, $200 restaurant?
Not much.
$300, $500. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Some of those meals, it's just, it's crazy how much they're charging for that stuff.
Well, it's like wine, too. You know, I mean, some people with a developed palate can tell difference between a high-end bottle of wine and a regular drinking
like
bottle
Kevin.
Of wine.
Like Kevin, for instance.
Most people think they can and can't.
No, I know. Kevin
right,
has
let's
this
close,
problem
let's
with wine
close
drinkers.
With Rick.
But I'm talking about stuff that there's no difference in function, like a lighter.
Yeah.
Like a lighter. If a Bic lighter lights my cigarette
right.
and a Dunhill for $300 lights my cigarette, F you! No difference!
Rick, hi.
Hey, first-time caller. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I dropped about 18 grand on a toolbox about a year back.
On a toolbox?
Yeah.
How do you spend 18 grand on that?
Well, it's a nice box.
It's nice box. Well, you
I
got
didn't
that.
No, it's nice.
Is it jewel encrusted?
No, it's not.
Does it come with a hooker?
No.
Oh, it's pretty big. It probably will.
But yeah. Wait, it's a box that holds your tools, though, right?
Yeah, it's a toolbox that holds my tools.
Wow.
$18,000.
Yeah, they could get out there.
Oh, you think? But what is it about it, do you think, that makes it worth $18,000? Like, what's going on this toolbox that we can't comprehend right now?
Well, I mean, mainly it probably just paid for the brand. But, yeah, it's a pretty big box. I mean...
Oh, it's a big box.
It's big.
You know, I can get a couple sheets of plywood, and I can build you a big box, too, for, like, $93.
If you'll pay him $18,000, he'll make
you
one.
I will make you the most beautiful big box you've ever seen in your life. And I will drill a hole in the side of that box, and I'll take care of you afterwards.
Money wasters! Money wasters! Money wasters! Stupid, expensive things are gonna happen!
Cha-ching!
Not a lot of people left around.
I feel a lack of commitment to the end of that song from KG Elephant. I'm sorry. It's the world famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ at 8:24.
Right into this world.
There it is.
All alone.
There it is, that unmistakable theme song from the Sons of Anarchy, Tuesday nights at 10. Don't you know, Lisa, it's the biggest hit in the history of FX, Sons of Anarchy is.
Wow.
Charlie Hunnan, one of the stars of the show, joins us here on the Kevin and Bean Show right now.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Charlie, so great to have you, and you're another one of these unbelievably good-looking, talented, successful actors who comes in, and I realize you're not even American. You're another one of these foreigners who comes
Damn
over
it.
Here and steals our job, does a perfect American accent, and people don't even know you're actually a freaking limey.
Yep, guilty as charged. Sorry.
Probably stealing your women, too, Bean.
I'm sure he is. Tell you, look, I guarantee Mrs. Bean would drop me in a second for a shot at Charlie. I have so many questions about the show, which I love, but let's start with you, Charlie, the man. How did you make your way all the way from London to Hollywood to be a big-time television star? How did it happen?
I got very lucky. I was just living in England, obviously, going to college, studying the theory and history of film, because I thought that I was going to be a writer-director. And all of a sudden, I got an opportunity to audition for an acting job, and got the job, did it, you know, did a reasonably good job, not a great job, but a reasonably good job
that?
For my first attempt. It was a miniseries called Queer as Folk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which was a huge, huge hit in England. It's one of the biggest shows that Channel 4 had ever had. And it basically was just kind of a drama about four gay men who happened to be gay, and it wasn't really about the fact that they were gay, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was funny at the time in England. The legal age of consent for heterosexuals was 16, for homosexuals it was 18. So it was still, you know, even 10 years ago, kind of a, you know,
wow.
a rather taboo subject to be bringing.
Isn't that
to the
interesting?
Main...
Now, was the purpose of that law, Charlie, because they thought, all right, you're about to have sex with another dude. You got to think about this for a couple more years. Don't rush into this. I mean, was that what they were thinking when they made that rule?
I guess so. I don't really know the origin of the law, but it certainly by the time 2000 rolled around, it seemed like it was you know, definitely so, time for a change.
A little antiquated, right.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you went out for this audition, this is fascinating to me. So, and there are a lot of actors who kind of fall into it. They don't grow up thinking, hey, I want to be an actor. Like in your case, you were into writing and directing, right? Did you say, hey, I'll go ahead and try out for this because it'll give me some more insight into actors? When I get to the point where I'm writing and directing, I'll know more about what it's like?
Well, that was exactly the case when I was at college. I took a side course in performing arts because I wanted to understand the process of acting a little bit more to facilitate, you know, my directing in later life. And then when I got this opportunity, I thought, you know, I'll probably learn so much more actually on a set than I will in college, even if it's not exactly the avenue that I was, you know, intending to pursue. And that's proven to be the case. You know, just being on set and watching the way the directors work and the whole production comes together.
So did you drop out of school?
I dropped out of school and moved to Los Angeles.
Your parents were like, yay!
Yeah, no, they were delighted.
No, it's always, anytime your kid drops out of school to go into the entertainment industry, your parents know it's a home run. No, there's no way that could fail, son. Good luck with that.
Right, sure.
So even though you were on this very successful show in Britain, you still wanted to come to America and tackle Hollywood, even though there's probably plenty of work in England, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a different industry. It's much, much smaller, you know, and there's a lot of really good quality stuff comes out of England. But I, as a kid, had just always looked to American film and had always dreamed about a career here. So when the opportunity to come and try my luck and, you know, seek my fortune came, I didn't hesitate for a second. So well, I've been out here now for 11 and a half years.
Wow, how about that? Now, the first time I became aware of you by name was on Sons of Anarchy, but I bet if I went back and saw Cold Mountain again, which I remember seeing in the theaters and loved that movie, I'd recognize you now because of it. Children of Men is another movie I loved. You were in that one. So you've had a pretty good track record of being able to pick good projects, too, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, it was always, you know, quality over quantity was always what was important to me. So I've had a couple of nice turns over the years. There were some giant periods of unemployment in between those films, but I was pretty proud of the films that I've done so far. And I feel like, I think at the beginning of someone's career as an actor's career, but in any field, I think really establishing oneself with integrity and building a foundation that'll last is what's most important.
Have to do anything during those periods of unemployment to make ends meet?
You know,
able to tide yourself over?
For the most part, I was able to tide myself over. I didn't do anything in the acting field.
You could have done a Bounty commercial if you wanted, but decided no.
Exactly. You know, I was actually offered a couple things, and, you know, when I was absolutely brassic broke, you know, for good money, and actually accepted one of them on a Friday afternoon and spent all weekend, and it was for a lot of money, and it was the time that I thought, you know, I was going to have to sell my house. Things were going really poorly, but I just felt fundamentally it was going to change the way I felt about myself as an artist, you know?
Porn was not for you.
Porn was not for me, so...
Beerbug, I know you're disappointed.
Yeah.
I put my team in a great position of accepting the job, and they started negotiating, and then a Monday morning pulled out, so there was a little bit of, you know, collateral damage was done, but...
Yeah.
When you showed up, I'm getting ahead of myself, maybe you didn't show up for an audition, maybe they called you, but how did Sons of Anarchy happen for you, and did you know instantly, this is a great role?
Yes, I knew right away. I mean, I'd been reading pretty much just exclusively films. I hadn't really been thinking about TV. And it was, you know, again, after a pretty long period of unemployment. And then this came, you know, across my desk. And I just thought the originality of the idea and the story that Kurt was trying to tell was so much more unique and colorful and vivid than most of the film work that I was, you know, looking at. So I just jumped at the chance.
And you bring up such a great point, and I've said this before on our show. For all the complaining that people do about how much bad television there is, and because we have so many channels, there's plenty of bad TV on. I really do think we're in some sort of a golden age right now when you look, particularly on the, you know, the cable channels like FX and the pay channels, you know, like HBO and Showtime. When you look at the Breaking Bads and you look at the Dexters and you look at the Sons of Anarchy and these kind of shows, these are the kind of things that would have been made into movies a few years ago. But I think artistically people are going,
going, hey, there's a way to even do it better than a movie, and that's to be able to carry it out over many, many hours and possibly over many, many seasons. And it's just, it's so rewarding for the viewer to have these this many great choices right now.
Yeah, it really is an exciting time for television. And the kind of taboo of television has really, I think, dissipated over the last few years. It's okay to work in TV and film, whereas, you know, a few years ago, the division was much more exaggerated.
Yeah, it was a step down, but now you right. see people like Glenn Close who are yeah. doing and great work
Kate
on
the Winslet, series. Yeah, mm-hmm. all of them. I mean, they go to where the work is. Now, we need to take a quick break. Charlie Hunnam is here from Sons of Anarchy, and I'm so excited to talk about the show. I was one of the people who was very late to the party on this. Like, with so many, you know, there's so many, you only have so many hours a day, you can't watch them all, and people say, oh, you got to check out the show. When I finally did, though, I was so mad at myself for not being on board from the beginning. For people who think I'm not interested in that show because it's a biker show, you're making the same mistake people did by saying, I don't want to watch Friday Night Lights because it's a football show.
Yeah.
It's not about being a biker. It's about these characters and the situations that they get in and the interactions that they have and their family and their lives and their choices and their futures. And it's so brilliantly done. And what a great cast you have there. And we'll talk all about Sons of Anarchy. It's FX Tuesday nights at 10. Our guest is Charlie Hunnam when we return on the Kevin and Bean Show. Shalom. 106.7 K-Rock, K-R-O-Q, 842. Dear Kevin and Bean, this email begins from Hope. Oh, my God, I'm sitting here dying at work. I love Charlie Hunnam so much. He's so hot. I'm such a big fan of Sons of Anarchy. It is awesome, kick-ass show. I just want to say he rocks, and I love him. You are amazing, Charlie. So see one fan letter, Charlie. Come on. That's got to make you feel good.
It makes me feel great.
Sons of Anarchy airs Tuesday nights at 10 on FX. And I mentioned before the break, people may see the commercials for this and say, hey, it's a biker movie. I don't care. Tell folks what your takeaway is on the Sons of Anarchy family now that you're into your fourth season on the show. What's the show about to you, Charlie?
It's much more of a family drama, really, than anything else. You know, it's kind of, by design, I think that the Sopranos, when it went off the air, left a really big gap in the market. And I think that that's really where a lot of our successes come, as we just swooped in and filled up that gap, you know? And just as, you know, The Sopranos is set in the world of mafia. It's really not as much about the mob as it is a family drama.
True.
It's about Tony Soprano and his wife and him going to this therapist and talking through his problems. And I think what's great about exploring a world through that dynamic is that, you know, you see these guys that ultimately, you know, on the face value, have such different lives from you and I. But then when you get into it, they're going through the same struggles that we all are. And, you know, I think it's really relatable, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of what these guys go through.
How foreign was the life of a California motorcycle club to a kid from England?
It was pretty far, and I didn't have very much contact with this world at all and knew nothing about it, which I think is what's, you know, what's kind of so great about going in and exploring this world is I think that that's the situation that most people are in. I mean, it's not a world that's been really explored very much in film or TV.
Yeah, so I mean, we grew up here, and that's all pretty new to me, too.
Yeah, and by nature of the world, it's so secretive that unless you get invited in by a TV show or something, it's not something ordinarily in our everyday lives that we'd be, you know, accepted or let into to explore.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Charlie, because the motorcycle gangs that you usually see in TV and movies are a cameo, basically, or it's a peripheral plot point.
Right.
And it doesn't go very deep into it. Yeah, it's usually just the bad guys. And it's fascinating. And this is The Sopranos is a great comparison for many of the reasons that you mentioned. But it's also because you find yourself rooting for people who are bad guys in some cases. And you also find yourself rooting for people who are in the motorcycle club who are good guys. And you're hoping, like, your character, for instance, and I'm not trying to spoil anything for folks who aren't watching, your character has made the decision that it's time to get out, that this is not the life that he wants to continue to do forever. And he wants to make his money and move out with his hot wife / girlfriend and go off and do something else.
Right.
And it's not that easy to get out of a life like this. I mean, it is something when you're in, for the most part, it's like being in a gang. It's hard to get out.
Right. Especially with the character that I play of Jax Teller, who was born into the club, and this is the only thing he's ever known. So it's not just leaving, you know, the patch or the club. I mean, it's leaving his family and all the friends that he's ever known, you know. I mean, I think the thing is that what these clubs do is create a family for a lot of people sometimes that don't necessarily have families, you know. A lot of these guys that, you know, that I've met that are part of these clubs really consider the club itself to be their main family group.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is what kind of reaction do you get from people who are really, you know, in the, you know, the Hells Angels or the Mongols or somebody like that? I mean, do they think it's realistic? Do they think your characterization is fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think the response that I've had from the contact that I've had with the real guys has been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, they get that it's larger than life and, you know, it's not a true reflection of the reality of the day-to-day life of these clubs. It's obviously, it's made for TV and, you know, what happens over the course of a week is probably, you know, as much action as one of these guys will see over the lifetime of being a member of a club. But, you know, I think that we ground it in enough reality that I think they buy it.
How'd the leather agree with you, Charlie, when you started to have to wear it all the time?
It's hot, man. It's hot. We're running around, you know, in 100, 105 degree temperatures in like the black hoodie and the leather jacket and the black hat. So it gets a little hot.
How did you do learning to ride a motorcycle and how comfortable are you with it now?
I love it. You know, it was such an epiphany. The one thing that I don't like about living in Los Angeles, well, actually, there are many things I don't like about living in Los Angeles, but top of that list is transportation and just trying to get around this damn city. But, you know, I just the first time I got on the bike on set and we were actually riding around the streets and getting around so quickly, it was like a major epiphany to me. And I went out and got a bike and I've been riding every day since. So
become... Are you one of those guys who's weaving between all of the cars on the 405 and the 101 when they're almost stopped?
Yep, that's me. And I actually, on my way here this morning, performed one of the most dangerous moves that you can perform on a bike in Los Angeles. I actually rode between two Priuses.
Check you out.
Which is a very dangerous thing to do, because in my experience, Prius drivers are not the best drivers on the road.
I drive a Prius.
I'm sorry about that. But I really have noticed.
We're just very quiet is what we are. You don't see us coming.
Well, I've been curious if there are a lot of blind spots in a Prius or if it just is, you know. There's something about the experience of driving a Prius that seems to get people to induce people to forget they're actually on the road.
Well, it's a very calming car.
Maybe that's
the
case.
I find it to be a very zen vehicle, so right. That might be it. We kind of just check out.
Right.
And they hate you on your motorcycle, and people like you, too.
Right.
All right. We're in our remaining moments, and this is killing me that we're having so little time with you, Charlie, because I'm such a fan of Sons of Anarchy, but I have to ask you a couple just quick rapid-fire questions. First of all, thank God for Katie Sagal getting a role like this to come back to television with. I know she was on Lost and she's been on a bunch of other things since Married with Children, but this role is the one she's going to be remembered for way beyond Peg Bundy. Isn't she brilliant on this show?
She's fantastic. And I think that nobody had, a great enough appreciation of her ability as a dramatic actor. So this has really been a great opportunity for her to show her chops.
And do I have it right? Is the creator of the show, Mr. Sutter, is he married to Katie Sagal?
Yeah, and I think a lot of what the show was about and the kind of the genesis of this idea was him trying to figure out a show that he could write for his wife. I mean, I'm the guy on the poster, but I think in a lot of ways, Katie's the real star of the show.
She's the heart
and soul of the show, and really the kind of the dangerous force behind the Sons of Anarchy. You know,
Ron Perlman is great in everything. He's a major figure on the show. He's kind of the leader of the gang. The beautiful Maggie Siff is your squeeze, and she's awesome. We fell in love with her from Mad Men last season. We heard reports that David Hasselhoff was going to be making an appearance on Sons of Anarchy. Was there any truth to that?
Yes, he comes on and plays appropriately a kind of an aging porn star who's famous for having some pretty impressive tackles. So
a huge talent,
exactly.
Great.
You probably can't answer this honestly. Maybe I should ask you off the air. But how is the Hoff as an actor?
He's great.
Say no more. Sons of Anarchy airs Tuesday nights at 10 on FX, and I think you can go to the FX website. It's still early in this current season, season number 4. You can see complete episodes if you want to get caught up to where the guys are. It's a great place to jump in on the show because your guys are back in charming California. You're out of jail. You're kind of involved in some stuff with the mob, with the Russians. It's so, so well done on every level. I can't tell you how much we enjoyed it. It airs Tuesday nights at 10 on FX. It's so great to finally meet you, Charlie, man. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're listening to 106.7 K-Rock, KROQ. Welcome in on a Wednesday show. Both Harold and Kumar, John Cho and Cal Penn, the actors, will be here tomorrow on The Kevin and Bean Show talking about their new Christmas movie coming out. And we'll talk to the great actor Bruce Campbell from Burn Notice in just a few minutes here on The Kevin and Bean Show. First up, Justin Bieber as Ralph was just talking about on the Showbiz Beat, Lisa, yes, should be having the time of his life this week. He's got his new Christmas album out. It's selling like gangbusters. He just completed a world tour, hundreds of dates. Couldn't be richer. He's got his gay Batmobile that he's driving around, and he's 17 years old. He's sitting on top of the world. But trouble in paradise now that a paternity suit has been filed against the Canadian teen idol. And Justin joins us back on the Kevin and Bean Show right now for an update. Hey, Justin, how are you, pal?
Hey, how's it going, eh?
It's going all right. Listen, I know you're on to promote your Christmas record. You're Under the Mistletoe that came out this week.
Yeah, how about that? It's like Christmas time. Merry Christmas, everybody, eh?
Yeah, we're getting pretty close to the holiday,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, it's like, tomorrow?
Well, no, it's only November 2nd, so yeah, you got quite a few weeks ahead.
But Canadian Christmas, then. It's a different time.
Oh, I guess I didn't realize that. But before we get to that, just because it's so newsworthy, please, we need your comment on this 20-year-old woman who says that last year she had sex with you. Now she has had your baby. You have a 3-month-old boy. She wants you to take a paternity test to prove it is not yours. Your comments.
Yeah, what's that all about, huh?
That's what we want to know.
Like, why would she be saying that about me, you know? It's like, I don't even know if I, like, ever met this girl, eh? And now she's, like, all backstage and saying that, we had, I don't know, we touched our naughty parts or whatever, eh? I'm in love, okay? So, like, I wouldn't even be doing that, whatever, let alone with some skanky old 20-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, how can you even see how to look at somebody that old, right, Justin?
Why don't she go back to the old age home or wherever she came from, eh?
Well, okay, just for the record then, do you remember having random groupie sex with anyone backstage at a concert at all last year, Justin?
That's not what I do, eh? Like, I'm all about love and going and seeing Titanic on the big screen at Staples Center and whatnot, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
So I don't even want to hear about this old lady saying I had sex with her. But I okay. will, I'm going to, when the paternity test comes out, I'm going to make sure that everybody knows that it's not real.
Okay, I have to ask because we've had you on the show many times before, Justin. But are you having? Do you have a cold? Are you having trouble with your throat? What's going on with you? You sound weird today.
No, it's just I think my voice is finally changing.
Oh, that's got to be an uncomfortable time for a teen sensation like you.
Yeah, it's causing some troubles with the the recording and some of the songs I do live in concert. So I gotta like. I just woke up one morning and I'm like, what's this all about? And I was singing a duet with Mariah Carey, mm-hmm. not to be confused with Mariah Yeater, the 20-year-old bitch who says I got her knocked up.
Okay. Right, a lot of Mariahs, yeah.
But
yeah.
Mariah Carey, we were doing her song, Only One for Christmas. and I was supposed to hit some high notes, and it was like not as easy as it used to be, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And what are these things between my legs, too, by the way?
Okay, those
are
just...
scaring the hell out of me. I got some kind of growths down there or something.
Nope, those are just testicles. It's just normal. I guess they drop at when you get to be about your age or so. You're just a little more testosterone starting to turn into a man is all, Justin.
I can't afford that. That is not part of my my career plan, you know? I don't think man Justin Bieber is a man's going to... be very commercially.
So, in other words, your bread and butter is having that sweet teen voice. Now, all of a sudden, you start to sound like a dude, and nobody's interested anymore.
And that sweet tween crotch, too, by the way.
Well, yeah.
That nice smooth crotch was like my claim to fame. It's going to be hard to be a lesbian when I got like hair on my face and my voice changes.
I don't think you're really a lesbian, though, Justin. I think that's a joke that people make. But what are you going to do, though, if you have this voice and then the little girls don't care about you anymore because you sound and look too old for them?
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen, man. So
I better start thinking about a new career.
What's happening now? Yeah. Come on, Justin. God.
I'm going to have to look into a new line of work, I think, you know? That ain't right, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Kids grow up so fast now, don't they?
Yeah, what's that all about? You know.
All right. Yesterday, Omar comes into the studio.
Yeah, I must have missed this conversation.
He kind of came in.
Because Omar's still alive, so I must have missed this conversation.
He kind of came in with his head held a little low, and mm-hmm. he was kind of mumbling a little bit. And that's not Omar. Usually Omar comes in and just screams and throws things.
Yeah.
So he walks in, and he's talking to Dave. I could only kind of hear it out of the side of my mind. I'm concentrating on something else, and I can sort of hear what's going on. And he sort of asked Dave what he thought about... what would happen if Omar would invite him to a couple's own a couple's baby shower.
Yeah.
Now Omar is having a baby, and that's troubling enough. I mean, there's no way Omar is supposed to be a father.
How dare you?
Seriously though,
I'm going to be a great dad.
Nope.
That's just not the case. So
he's testing the waters for a co-ed baby shower. Yep. Whereas most baby showers are just the ladies get together and they ooh and ah over baby clothes and diapers and other gadgets involved.
Yeah, but if you don't mind my saying, first of all, before we move on to the couples.
Okay.
For the most part, women hate baby showers.
Oh, I think you're mistaken.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I've
talked to a lot of women.
Some women
Kat
do.
And I don't.
Some women
really?
Do.
I mean, we don't want to go.
Especially single women who don't have children are the least interested in all women. Right. But there are a ton of other women who really get off on the baby stuff.
As soon as we started telling that Kazzy was pregnant, I mean, everybody was talking about the baby shower. It was like instant.
Okay.
It was crazy.
At what point did the baby shower become bring the guys... And where were your balls at that moment?
As you know, when your wife is pregnant and she's going through the emotional changes that she goes through when, you know, she's having a baby.
Yeah.
The moment she got pregnant, my balls were in a vice, basically, is what happens. Because, you know, she's in a delicate state and I will do anything to please her.
Right.
But right now, you know.
That's why you lock him up for 9 months, Omar. What did I tell you?
Sorry, my bad.
You
I forgot.
Just put her in a cage for 9 months. That way she can't get at you.
And I don't know that.
Omar's gonna be a bad dad.
Stop your crying.
Yeah. But you know it's.
So she says couples baby shower.
Yeah.
But she still brings up this idea.
Yeah.
So and then you have to find a creative way to massage her around the idea of that not happening. You have to use all of the forces that you're. Disposal.
Now,
without an out-and-out confrontation, you have to find a way to make it happen.
Now, before we move on,
that
thought hit you, right? I mean, at that moment, you went, oh, no.
Well, I didn't go in my head, oh, no. I said, no, to her.
Even
and
better.
She's all like, think again, dude. Yeah. And I was like, okay, what am I going to say to that? You know? That's what happened, yeah.
So she just closed you down that quick?
Oh, yeah, totally.
You're done. You are finished on every level.
Now, we should give you a little more background on Omar, and that is that he's lucky to have her.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's marrying up. He married up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are you going to do? But then you walk in here talking about a couple's baby shower.
You know,
Come on.
Yeah, you know, I consider you guys close, and, you know, we want to invite people that are close to us. Uh-huh. So, but also, I know how you guys would react to it, too.
We're close to not coming.
Yeah.
That's what we're close.
Yeah.
Were you scared to come in and bring it up?
Because
you were kind of mumbling. Like, I didn't even barely hear it. And finally, I perked up. I was like, are you not talking about inviting us to a couple's baby shower?
Oh, yeah. You should tell the geese about a shower.
Yeah.
You should tell them about the co-eyed shower.
Yeah, I want to get Dave's feel first. And,
well, Dave's the only man in the studio who would go.
Yeah, true.
He'd knit some little jumper or something. He would bring little panda hats for everybody. I mean, you talk to the one guy who's the most womanly of all of us.
As soon as I brought it up, he started naming off games that we could play.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm sure he's up for it.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is that these stupid games, then you win like dipe. I don't know what happens at those things, but they're not fun. They can't be fun.
Yeah. But we want to turn it into more of a party.
Oh, they all do.
That's what everyone says when they pitch this.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like a regular shower. It's going to be like a party for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be great. No, lies. Yeah. Have the baby shower and then have a party. We'll all come.
Yeah. All right.
Have a real party
and we'll
separate.
Bring stuff.
Okay. Right. What if she promises to have a mountain to blow there?
All right. Now you're talking about it.
That's
got
to be a party.
He's just saying
that
to be funny, though. All right. Now, listen. I'm not accepting the fact that you have to take part in this yet. You gave up way too quick.
That probably is true.
I know you're marrying up. Yeah. I know she's the one that needs to be taken into account. But there's got to be a way we can circle back around to that original decision.
I'm open to ideas, for sure.
And get you out of it.
I need to get out of it, yeah.
Oh, so people who've been... Kevin. I think you're shooting a little high. I'm just trying to get us out of it. You're trying to get him out of it?
Come on.
Yeah, he's on his own.
Yeah, he's going to have to be there.
No. Let him lose.
Because he's already, that bridge is burnt. There's no way he can go back.
That's where we're going to end up. But we're also going to end up with us not being there. I think if we go back and try and get him out of it. So what we want to do is take calls from listeners who have been in this exact situation. You have been told by your wife or girlfriend that there's going to be a couple's baby shower.
Mm-hmm.
And you did what Omar did, which was no. And then they said, oh, think again. And then you shut up, and then you started. Then, man, you got to face all of the guys, and you know none of the guys want to come to a baby shower.
Yep.
So give us a call at 1-800-520-1067. Best case scenario, we can work Omar out of it without making his wife mad.
Yes.
Yeah. That's called divorce, Kevin.
that's the only option. That's not making her mad, though. That's what I'm saying. So, but then really, seriously, what we want to do is get us out of it. So, 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your... What a giant pussy you are.
Yeah.
Meow. Yeah. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're going to say no.
You can't.
Well, you know, this sets the tone for your entire marriage, Omar. You realize these early battles that you fight... You must win or else you're done. You're finished. You are setting the tone forever.
Do you realize how many times she's forgiven me for dumbass things that I've done?
True. You are behind the eight ball, but I'm
way behind.
Look, you got two strikes on you. It's 0-2 on you. But seriously, this is one you need to win because Ralph's right. This is just the beginning.
Well, I need help.
Got to draw a line somewhere,
I don't know
man.
What to do.
You know what kind of games they play at baby showers? They have, Lisa was just telling me.
Bad ones, I'm guessing?
They give you a piece of ribbon, a length of ribbon, and then you cut it to how big you think her stomach is right this minute. And the closest gets, like, a scented candle.
Yeah. Oh, sweet Lord.
Good times, right?
You got to give out prizes, Ralph.
There's a bag of rice, and they put a bunch of safety pins in, and you get 30 seconds. Whoever gets the most safety pins wins.
Foot cream
or something.
I'm coming to this shower now.
I need another glass of
I'm bringing the reggaeton horn, and I'm going to just be blasted, vomitous drunk.
I love that idea.
And then I'm just going to offload right in the middle of the party. Why'd you get your ribbon and measure this and see how big you think this is?
All right, let's take some calls and see if we can get some help. Eddie, hi.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi, Eddie.
Well, bad things are up. That's what's up.
Hey, the greatest baby shower I went to is my friend. We took kegs, we took shots, we had DJ doing keg stands, we were shooting yard glasses.
See, but that's not really a baby shower. Like,
yeah, was your wife happy with that? Because she couldn't do any of that.
Was your wife there?
It was my friend's baby shower.
Oh, it was your friend's wife.
Yeah, so he goes, come on, you got to come with me, help me set up with the party. I go, hey, are you going to give me a drink? He's like, yeah, I got a keg there. I got a couple bottles of liquor. I'm like, all right, all right. He took out a big old glass yard.
Yeah.
I was filling that up, giving it to everybody, shooting it down. I mean, by the end of the party, everybody was shit-faced.
All right, easy there, language.
Did you win a candle?
If only there was some way I could drink beer and do shots and not be at a baby shower. If there was only some way I could manage that. Oh, that's right. They have these things called bars that I can go to.
Thank you, Eddie. By the way, that is the answer for every single person that calls. They go, well, add alcohol to it. And our answer is, let's drink alcohol apart from it.
Already have alcohol. Don't need the baby shower.
You know who can't participate in that? The woman that's pregnant?
Yeah. But that kind of sucks.
All right. Let's go to Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
I had a couple's baby shower and
you to hell, first of all. go ahead.
Well, I was with my husband for a very long time, so his friends were my friends, so I wanted them to go as well.
Yeah, because you wanted to punish them.
No, we had a taco man, we had a margarita machine, we had a drinking game, like drinking beer out of a baby bottle.
Sweet heavens.
That's
horrible.
Another one is they have a race, like they'll put beer in a baby bottle and then you have to suck it through the nipple.
That doesn't make it okay or fun, just because you're adding booze to the baby bottle game.
Our gifts were scented candles. They were like bottles of booze or like gift certificates.
Doesn't matter. Stop it. It's still a baby shower.
Stop it, people.
I think Omar should stick with it and you guys should all go. You'll have a
Of course you do. Of course you do, because you're one of the problems.
I think so too, Carrie. All the guys should go.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I will guarantee you something right now. If we go, you'll regret it.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm telling you that right now.
You're going to wish you... Actually, this may be the way to teach Kazi a lesson.
No.
This may be a way to teach Omar's wife a lesson. Never let this happen again.
But shouldn't she know that? She's married to Omar.
That is true.
You have to remember, Omar, Kevin was throwing candy-coated almonds at people at your wedding. Kevin was pelting people with almonds. That. He and Lightning were having an almond fight while you guys were doing your first dance at your wedding.
Oh, that's good times.
I don't know that your wife will appreciate that.
I don't know. She has a good, pretty good sense of humor.
Oh, also, man.
Throwing alcohol into the mix isn't the best idea with me around.
No,
especially
that's a terrible
shower,
idea.
You know?
Well, when I unleash the Kraken in the center of the room at your party, I don't think she's going to have much of a sense of humor about that.